Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, let's get things started. I'm texting with my guests in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm converting to East Coast time, which is 10 o'clock hour, and things are just kind of crazy here. But Bill's back. Bill's back, so I'm just going to get rolling here. I think things have been such a blur. I think he missed last – I'm pretty sure he missed last week, and I was just talking through it. But I figured all of a sudden I heard, oh, my theme stopped. I better start talking. The show, everything's gone so crazy here. We have the most amazing guests. We have the most amazing panels. We got Monday's show was unbelievable. We have another year of our world's greatest doctor panels coming up tomorrow. In the meantime, let's get to the FETKI. There we go. Report.
Hold on tight. Action Radio presents the FETKI Report.
Good morning, Sir Gregory of Penglis. I am back after a two-week vacation.
Got a title now. Refreshed. This is kind of cool. Yeah. Oh, good. Glad you're refreshed. Like I say, if you look at the last couple of weeks of what's going on, the doctor shows our show Monday with reading the poetry of Soldiers Written in Combat, and the early morning Zoom calls I've been doing with Australia on the Australian Bill of Individual Rights. It's been nuts around here. So I love it, though. I mean, I do. I'm getting too casual about this radio show thing. It's just, like, the theme's playing. I'm like, okay, I'm still texting. I'm like, oh, when the music stops, I guess I have to talk now. This is so crazy. Anyway, how are you, sir? What's going on? What's what we've been doing the last couple of weeks?
So when I called you last, I was on my way up to Chicago. I was in Indiana, just north of Indianapolis. I was watching the wind turbines not work.
Are they frozen? Do they work in the wintertime or what?
Who knows what?
Well, so actually, it's spring now. But what?
It's spring now. About half of them. Half of them were working. Half of them were not.
Huh.
Like usual. Every time I go up in that direction, there's always a bunch of them that are either broken or just not working for whatever reason. But you know, had a really good trip. Went out to a friend of mine's son's wedding up in upper Wisconsin, which was really nice. Came back down through Cincinnati, and just south of Cincinnati, inside of Kentucky, is Noah's Ark, the Noah Ark encounter. It's a life-size Noah's Ark.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. We'll get to that in a second. Did you stop at the WKRP Cincinnati sign in Cincinnati and pay homage to our mentors and predecessors in this crazy business?
So there is absolutely nothing I like about Cincinnati.
It's an
armpit town. I will say I went to the Cubs game against Cincinnati Reds on Monday night. And
who won?
Cubs won.
Yeah.
Cubs won, which was nice. you know, in the riverfront is really nice there. I will give them credit for that. But once you go about 3-4 blocks north of the downtown area, it just turns to crap immediately. You got University of Cincinnati, Xavier University is all in the northern part of Cincinnati, and they're just crappy areas. There's no way around it. And just looking at it, it looks like that the race wars they still haven't rebuilt from the race wars back in, was it the early 2000s maybe, early 90s, and then also again in the 60s. You know, there's been some race riots there, and it just looks like they never rebuilt from that. It's just really crappy. So, but, you know, but that's enough of that. But, you know, like I said, the Noah's Ark encounter, I strongly recommend everyone go to that at least one time. The words in the pictures do not do it justice. And it's a life size based upon the Bible. The dimensions, the inside, everything is according to the Bible. Now they did take some, since the Bible didn't talk about everything like sewage drainage. So they kind of took the liberties on that and how they thought it would happen. But most important, but it was really great. They had a little zoo there. It wasn't much of, you know, maybe about 12 different types of species, 14 different types of species, something like that. But it wasn't that big. But it, overall, though, that was really awesome. And then tied to that, even though it was a 45-minute drive from the Ark Encounter, is the Creation Museum. Now, that Creation Museum is incredible. Ken Ham is the creator of all of this. And Ken Ham, he's been on many shows debating Bill, the Science Guy, and won every single time. He's always leaves Bill Nye stumped and without comebacks. But,
it's kind of like the
Hollywood
Globetrotters and the Washington Nationals. That's what it sounds like, that Washington Nationals always lose.
Yeah, and if the press would have built it up that way, yeah, it'd be like that. But, of course, the press kind of ignores it whenever they debate because Ken Ham's right and Bill Nye's wrong. And the Creation Museum does a great job of explaining why evolution is wrong. And they use science to debunk science. And that's what I loved about it so much. And I strongly recommend everyone if you get a chance to get up there, it's 10.5 hours from where we are in Pensacola, Florida. It's just south of Cincinnati. It's right off of I-75. And it's just a great, great exhibit, great educational tool. I think every single kid should be should go to this museum to really debunk what's being fed inside schools.
Well,
right now,
let me ask you a couple of questions then, Bill. Did you happen to run into or talk to Mr. Ken Ham?
Oh, no. Ken Ham is, you know, I mean, he's, you know, right. I mean, he built that thing six, you know, it opened 6 years ago. He's just
no, not the Ark at the Creation Museum. He runs both of those, right?
Oh, no, he's. No, he doesn't run them. He created them.
He created them. Well, see, you know what I'm about to ask you, don't you? How do we get Ken Ham on the show?
Yeah, and I know. And, you know, we have to figure out a way.
You knew that was coming as soon as you brought it up,
out,
right?
I can figure out, I can figure out a way to get him on the show. But the vision he had is incredible. What he did with that vision is even better. And it was just a great, great overall experience that entire day. And it's a full day. You know, I spent about 3.5-4 hours inside the Ark and then about 3 hours inside the Creation Museum.
You're not
required
to spend the full
40
days, though, right? You're not required to spend the full 40 days for the experience? I'm just curious. I'm just, don't mind me. Okay, fine.
Yeah, I'm ignoring you. Don't worry. It's definitely... It's definitely an eight-hour day. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a full 8 hour day, but the day goes by so fast because the information that they're giving you is just so interesting. And you could go as fast or as slow as you want to. It's just a self-guided tour type of deal. So if you want to read something, read it. If you don't want to read it, don't read it. It's about a 4 hour.
He's swearing on the air. Well, let me ask you a question then. That's okay. No, I don't care. If you could explain creation, decreation, creationism, based on what you learned in the museum and the Ark, you know, in a short, you know, news radio soundbite type format. Normally, you can take as long as you want. Actually, I don't care. But if you were to explain it from what you learned, how would you explain creation versus evolution?
Well, all you have to do is just read the first part of Genesis. You know, God created light. Created the sun and moon. Then he created. And Wendy's going to get mad at me because I'm going to put this in the wrong order. I know I am.
Wendy's coming up today too. She's on after you at 8 o'clock. So I'll ask her about it. Say, Wendy, don't forget to review. Can't review the podcast. Yeah, but hopefully she's listening now.
So she could go ahead and correct me later. But you know, then God created the plants. He created the fish. He created animals. And then from the dirt on the ground, he created man and then created woman. And then on the seventh day, he rested. That's basically in a nutshell.
Okay, so how long were the days? Did they talk about how long the days were? In other words, I used to have this debate with my daughter, who was at a Christian school, and she says, well, the world was created in 7 days. And I asked her, were those God days or earth days? And she's like, what? She's like or no, about I think 9 minutes at this point. And I said, well, let's talk about that.
I always said the same thing in thinking mm-hmm. that evolution and the Bible kind of intertwine. That was always my theory on it. But when you read the Bible, and it says very specifically, and the sun rose and the sun set and the sun rose, and that ended day one. So if you're talking about the sun rising and the sun setting, or vice versa, is how they say it in the Bible, that's just a normal day.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have an issue with thinking that God can't do it in one day, then you don't believe anything else inside the Bible.
Okay, so if God created the universe, then I'm playing devil's advocate here, literally devil's advocate.
Yeah.
So if God created the universe, you've got days on Jupiter that are different from days on Saturn. So are we talking about an Earth day in the Bible? Are we talking about a day on Mercury, which is about 6 hours?
He created Earth, right?
Okay.
He created Earth, so we're talking about Earth.
Okay. So we're talking about 7 24-hour days.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just curious. I mean, you know, all right. So I come at this from a different point of view, more of not actual. That's the wrong word to say, but a scientific point of view. In other words, I'm looking at the complexity of the universe. I'm looking at subatomic nuclear particles to supernova stars, you know, and the incredible differences in between. I'm looking at the fact that it all works, that we have a universe that may be expanding and contracting or both, that time is kind of fluid. There's multidimensional, you know, things happening. And the fact that everything we could possibly want on the Earth for our, you know, not just survival, but to flourish, you know, from oil to steel to, you know, tungsten to aluminum to diamonds to gold to, you know, paper to everything we need, cotton, it's all here. And we got water, we got air, we've got land, we've got the right temperature range, we've got, you know, our brains, you know, all these things, and none of that
seems to be an accident. It's the perfect environment is what you're saying.
Well, it's not perfect. It's pretty hot. It's pretty hostile. I don't, you know, I would ask God why God created a situation where like 99% of life on Earth is trying to eat the, you know, everything else, you know, even the plants, the bugs.
Because Greg, you know, if you read the Bible, it tells you.
Oh,
that.
Don't get condescending with me, Mr. Self-Righteous.
But
you're talking to
an
ADHD
all,
host here. What do you mean? If I tried reading the Bible, I my mind wanders after you know, like the third line. I can't do it. I tried. This is why I have you guys on. So go ahead, Mr. Prophet.
Yeah,
tell me about what I missed.
I only wish I could be a prophet.
Well, okay, so you're our morning prophet go ahead. So if I read the Bible, what would I read that you're about to tell me?
So God created the perfect earth. Everything mm-hmm. on it was perfect. There was no hate. There was no nothing. You had, I don't want to say illegal, but it was unethical. God, I don't even know what the right word I want to use is. But basically, you weren't allowed to eat animals, and you couldn't eat each other. That's why God put...
Well, cannibalism, yeah, I understand that.
Listen,
that's definitely...
Listen.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Listen.
Go ahead. All right.
Okay. God put plants on the earth for animals and humans to eat. Okay?
Well,
that's
did he
what
ask
it says
the
in
plants
the Bible.
How they felt about that? Okay, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's why he put the plants there for vegetation and for eating. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
what ended up happening is obviously they didn't trust the word of God. They, you know, Eve ate the apple. Everything went downhill from there.
The apple's a plant.
At that point in time. So God told Adam and Eve they can't have anything in the world, but they can't eat from the tree of life. The one tree
thought,
they can't
I thought it was the tree
from.
Of knowledge. Wasn't it the tree of knowledge?
Pretty sure it's true. Maybe it's true.
I don't know.
I've already texted
Wendy to get her to listen in. See if Wendy's going to help us out.
It's the tree of life. Okay,
okay,
so it's the tree of life. Here comes the serpent with disguise as the devil. He said it's okay to eat from there, and he tried to quote the God, and they believed him, and then therefore they got punished. And, you know, a lot of things happened along the way, but basically at that point in time, you know, man basically gave Satan the rights to earth. Things got really bad. Here comes the flood. God said, you know, mm-hmm. you guys are way out of control. Here's the flood.
Okay,
We're wiping it out.
That's not exactly what I asked. I want to understand how you understand creation. Okay. And the reason I'm asking you as a non-biblical scholar. No, you're going to just doing a history lesson. I want to understand how you understand creation. How is this possible? Just be, is it as simple as God said, and therefore it was?
Yes.
Okay, so see, I'm on the intelligent design thing, that that this was a structured, you know, I just see it more complex, in a much more complex fashion than you do. Not that that's wrong, it's just different. So I see the interconnections of everything. You know, and like I say, you know, between land, sea, and air, and from subatomic nuclear particles to the universe is a vast difference, and an infinite difference in, you know, difference in size and scope, and it seems to me that it is a very complex system that I think you're I don't want to say simplifying, because you know, but you're explaining it, like I say, you're giving a Bible history lesson, which is fine, but I want to understand how
you
understand
you
it.
You asked me to in a very short radio time frame, so I gave you
I should say that. Forget the radio time frame. Let's go for the action radio version. I want to understand how you understand the universe without the history lesson, but how do you intrinsically understand this? How do you understand that God would create this and structure the world the way it is structured? That's what I want to understand.
Oh, I don't understand how everything was created. All I could tell you is if you just read what the Bible says, and then you go through this, you know, just go through – you know, go ahead and just YouTube anything about the flood versus evolution. Lays it out so, using science, it lays it out so perfectly onto why evolution is wrong. And evolution, you know, Darwin even admits that his theory is incomplete and that he cannot prove the link between apes and humans. He took a giant leap and assuming that based upon one study that he did in the Galapagos Islands on finches. And he looked and he did a study on finches and saw the evolution of finches. The problem with that whole theory is that that evolution of finches only created nine different species of finches, but they were still finches.
Let me extend your own argument here. There's the problem with that whole thing with the finches is that Darwin confused evolution with adaptation. You know, you look at people now are taller than people used to be. We've got better food. We've got better nutrition. We live longer. We got better medicine. Okay. Are we a different species?
Correct.
No. The last species was Cro-Magnon and the species before that was Neanderthal. You know, and those
Correct.
Are actually different species. And there, but what defines a species, though, is an individual, you know, or group of organisms that can reproduce. Now, could a big beak finch mate with a small beak finch and produce a finch? Probably. So that means they're not different species. They just
Correct.
Existed. Okay. So you look at people. You look at you know, people from, I don't know, Zambia versus Nepal. Totally different people, totally different cultures, totally across the world from each other. Can they reproduce? Yes. So we're all the same species. Okay? So that's the difference, even though, you know, people look completely different. You know, compare Inuits to folks in Chile. You know, I mean, just pick
right.
any two corners of the world, we're still all people, but we've all adapted. Look at Pianki into this one. I want to hear what he has to say. Pianki, welcome to the show.
Yeah, you're right. And you talk about God, and I really don't like getting these conversations unless it's specifically.
Well, you called in.
On it. But which God are you talking about? Every ethnic group had their own God. Man created gods, technically. And you're talking about the Bible, where God created the world in 7 days. But you go back in ancient times, especially ancient Egyptian, and you go on the islands of Philae, you see a 10-day week calendar that existed before your Gregorian calendar. And then there's the 25,000-year calendar there at the Temple of Dendera. So no one goes back that far to have these discussions. They stop with the conquering of Constantine and what we have today.
Yeah, in fact, the communists used a 10-day calendar, too, and they found it didn't work. You really need to rest on the seventh day. But we had – this is why I want to get Dan Skyhorse back, the chief of the Santa Rosa Creek tribe, because when we talk about ancient history, we go back 60,000 years. And so then the Mayan calendar probably goes back even further. And so there's a very different understanding of time. The Druids had time in Stonehenge. That's what Stonehenge was. It was a calendar, even though, you know, it was a rock calendar.
I've been on dig sites that dated material back people's garbage back over 65,000 years there in at the at Haliwawa there in southern Egypt near the Sudan. So people can believe what they want to, and it's okay.
Okay,
yeah, but
so this is the deal with that. Okay, so this is the deal with a lot of these findings that they find like deep inside the earth or whatever, or you see like they find dinosaur remains that are supposedly, you know, 1 million years old. All they're doing is basing this based upon a false half-life of a of something. All right, so what, you know, how can you explain a dinosaur found 200 feet or 300 feet down in the earth? How do you explain that?
Same way you explain seashells at the top of the Sierra Mountains in California. The earth moves.
The earth does.
Up and down.
But
it moves up and down, too. I mean, it moves.
That's not what they say. What they're saying is that every level, every layer of the earth is so many years old, just like a tree ring. So if their theory is, if current science is correct, then that means the earth is constantly expanding, because that means every single year that the earth is around, there's another layer, you know, there's more layers that are being put down.
Yeah,
so
that's not
that
true,
in itself is false.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
right?
You know, look at the thing, like, for instance, the Tower of Babel, and they were going to build a tower up to the heavens. Well, what happens when you get up to the point where your mortar for your cement, your mortar for your bricks freeze before you can get up to the level where you land bricks? Even down on Earth, bricklayers do not lay brick unless the temperature is 30 degrees and rising. At 35,000 feet, Greg, we know, because we're pilots, that you're talking about a temperature that's about 25 below zero.
At
so
least.
All these things sound good.
Wait.
All these things sound good, but they don't pass.
The Tower of Babel. You're misunderstanding what they're saying. When they're saying they're trying to build something to the heavens, they're not getting anywhere close to the heavens. They didn't even get close to the Sears Tower or the Empire State Building. They didn't build it that tall. It was very simple. I mean, they built it, and every civilized society has tried to build a tower to go to the heavens. Every civilization has a flood story. Okay, that's the important thing to remember here. Everyone has these same stories. So unless you're telling every ancient civilization that they're lying, I mean, but yet you're going to try to believe a Mayan calendar that's 25,000 years old, but you're not going to believe that they had a flood story. I mean,
like you said, every civilization has a flood story, and the oldest is that of the goddess Nut coming on her menstrual period and flooding the land. There's none older than that we can find. The oldest creator god is that of Ptah. Ptah said, when I came into existence, existence itself came into existence, and the lesser god. So you cannot dismiss what these people thought, nor should I don't dismiss what you think.
You know, it's interesting.
I don't dismiss what they're saying. I just think that it's all one and the same. And people just call it by a different name. But when you watch, when you look at the parallels of so many different societies, you know, for example, there was a Indian culture here in America, and I can't remember which one, and I apologize, but they have a flood story and they have an ark story, but their ark was a canoe. Why? Because that's what they knew. You know, there's there's an ark that's a cube. There's an ark that's kind of like a bowl, more or less. I mean, they have different stories, but a lot of times, since they don't know the exact dimensions or what's being described to them, they interpret it to what they know. That's why the Indians said that when the Great Flood happened, one family survived on a canoe, because that's what they had. They had canoes. So same thing with God. You know, I firmly believe that all the different gods, you know, Allah, whoever, is all the same God. It's just being interpreted differently. And I don't want to get too deep into religion here, but because I'm glad Piotr's on the phone. Because, well, I don't have enough time to sit there and argue.
Let's get the news then. We'll pick this up.
Yeah,
Wendy,
I'm glad Piotr's on because
Hold on, Piotr. Bill's got 5 minutes. Let's make sure we get his report in.
Yeah. So Piotr, you're in South Florida, right?
No, I'm down in the Delta, down in Louisiana right now.
Oh, you're in Louisiana. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't know why I always thought you were in South Florida. Okay.
No, he commutes. Well, he commutes from Missouri to Louisiana. We never know where he is. We should get a GPS on him. Go ahead.
Well, this does count for Piotr also, because AAA just came out with the Florida evacuation report. Now they're heading into hurricane season starting today. There's already two disturbances one in the Atlantic, one in
a disturbance
Gulf.
In the force? Oh no. What will we do?
And it looks like that Southern Florida is going to get hit with something this coming weekend. But they came out, they did a survey on people who evacuate. And none of these numbers really surprised me being here in Florida. But the reasoning why I found a little shocking. So 40% of people that were surveyed said they have no plans to evacuate unless it's at least a Category 3. 29% do not make any advanced preparations at all for hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
25% will ignore an evacuation order, which, you know, we've seen that happen in New Orleans, what happened there with a bunch of deaths when you decide to ignore an evacuation order.
Mm-hmm.
42% said that because of high gas prices, that would make them stay.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I was going to explain that the gas price policy of the Brandon insurrection is actually racist because it takes advantage of minority folks that won't have the money to evacuate in a hurricane.
Yep.
Therefore, gas prices are racist.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yes, it's
beautiful. Where
are the GOP
accurate.
Geldings? I mean, where the GOP? This is a perfect talking point for the GOP geldings, but they won't do it. So I just did.
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly. And so 30% of them said that they won't evacuate because they can't bring their pets. 28% say there's nowhere to go. 23% say they're unable to afford a hotel. So this is my thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in Louisiana, Alabama, Florida, I'm even going to go as far as South Carolina and North Carolina, Texas, you've been hit with so many hurricanes over these last 10 years, 15 years,
right,
where Louisiana's basically been buried to the ground. Talk about a flood. I mean, you know, our biblical catastrophe. Louisiana has felt that the last 10 years, you know, just being pounded time and time again. You received all this free money from the government based on taxpayer. It's taxpayer money, but it's given to you for free with now you're feeling it, though, with the inflation. It's
taken from us for free,
but,
too.
Why are you not saving a little bit of money for escaping? When you tell me that you have nowhere to go, that's a bunch of crap. If you have a car and you just have, we'll say, $200 to your name, you could drive north, get out of the storm, stay at a rest area, and then come back home. You're only talking 2 days. Honestly, it's about 2 days that you have to stay away before a storm is, you know, has come and gone. So the excuse of nowhere to go is really, really lame. I understand the affording a hotel, bringing pets. What kind of pet do you have that you cannot take with you? I understand like a horse farm or something, but, you know, honestly, if you're going to stay to save your horses, you're going to die with the horses. I mean, that's just a fact. So, people that
horses
are
can swim.
In
they might be okay. You know.
Well, you know,
go
people
find
didn't
later.
Want to leave Sodom and Gomorrah, did they? But, you know, if the government would leave these states alone as far as their regulations and let them do their own exploration and drilling and have their own EPA that does just fine, then they would have the money to do those things. But, no, federal government's got its hands in everything. They want taxes, which I think is ridiculous. You take Louisiana, the offshore oil drilling that's going on. if that was under the control of Louisiana on the side boundary that represents the state running out the international waters, well, parts of that revenue could come back to the citizens of Louisiana and be divvied up in the form of royalties like we see in Alaska. But no, Washington wants to have his hands in everything, and actually, factually, states need to tell the federal government to go to hell. This is our land.
Well, yeah, and I can't wait. I think either next month or the month after, we have our candidate forum here in Escambia County for the state house candidate. And one of the first things I'm going to ask them is, Florida has really become a huge juggernaut. We're one of the top. We have one of the top GDPs in the world, let alone in America. When do we get to the point that we start invoking our 9th and 10th Amendment rights and kicking the federal government out of Florida? That's what I want to know. You know, when do we get to that point? Because, you know, North Carolina recently voted in favor of the Convention of States. So now I think we're up to 14 that have agreed to this, or 19 states that have agreed to this, which
yeah,
I'm not
a dumb idea,
in favor of.
It's national
yeah,
suicide,
I'm not
that whole thing. Yeah.
It is. I agree. I'm not really for it, but the idea of states wanting to start taking back what is theirs is the important thing. And we started seeing that during COVID, where the states have really kind of put their foot down on the federal government. And I like the fact that they're doing this, but I think the Convention of States thing is an empty promise, and it's just and it'll be the end of America as we know it. That's my personal opinion on it.
Well, what you got to do is have the conversation. That's where it all begins. And people who are less aware and knowledgeable of what the civic duties is and what those documents curtail, they need to be made aware and realize just how much power they have. I'm all for states taking back their power. As I said before, tell the federal government to go to hell, especially on gun regulations and anything else.
Yep. But, guys, I have to go earn my dollar for today. It was great talking to you, and I will talk to you next Wednesday.
That's good. You're missing all the fun, though, leaving now. Call us in your car. Oh, okay. Anyway, so Bill's gone. Yeah, and Pianki, you actually are leading into our next segment here. So Bill's gone. Wendy's going to drop in at the top of the hour. But I had a thing on this, what I call the do-something syndrome. And I just found an article last night by Lee Williams, who is now calls himself the gun writer. And he's saying exactly the same things we've been saying, that this idea that you have to do something, you know, that government can solve the problem. And there isn't a law in the world that will stop crazy people, because by definition, crazy people don't care. Because, you know, the insane, the criminally insane, and this is what these people are that can go in and shoot and kill kids in schools, are criminally insane. You're not going to stop them with legislation. You just have to stop them. You know, you don't stop a serial killer by making laws against serial killings. You stop a serial killer by stopping them. And this is what's missing from this whole argument, and this lack of separation. And that's why I talked about this on Facebook last night and other places, and we talked about the show yesterday too. We did a whole show on gun laws. In fact, I sent out a press release to hundreds and hundreds of people that we have gun laws that are actually gun laws. And in fact, Pianki was there going over them with me yesterday on the show. But if you want to do something, then do something positive. But the most important thing to do that the gelding should be doing is making the distinction that individual rights, you know, are completely separate from the actions of criminals. You cannot stop criminals by affecting individual rights, and you will not increase crime by increasing rights or maintaining rights. The two have nothing to do with each other. Criminals don't care about rights, don't care about laws, do what they want in exclusion, in separation from constant. They don't get it. Frankly, they don't
get
it.
Yeah, and they don't believe. And, you know, in giving respect to your last call, criminals don't believe in God neither. And you have to look at this as a wrestling match. Never in a wrestling match do you want your opponent to get on top of you or get you in a hole that prevents you from being free. And that's what's going on with this government. This government is chipping away a little bit and a little bit and a little bit at a time. And sooner or later, just like in a wrestling match, you would find yourself in a position where you can't get free.
Yeah, that's when the gulag start, and I'll meet you in the gulag. We'll be gulag mates, and you know, until they put a bullet in our heads. But until that happens, We there's so many things we can do, and I'm not calling for armed revolution. I mean, a lot of people are. I'm not. I created Action Radios to specifically avoid that, to give another choice. You know, when you go, you can't go from ballots to bullets. There has to be a whole lot of steps in between. And I think the most important step right now is bills, is the fact that we are writing common sense bills that actually are common sense, that provide hearing protection for people who have to defend themselves, that make gun ownership a civil right. So that people can redress the grievances that aren't addressed by the Second Amendment, because the Second Amendment doesn't have any penalties to it, and it shouldn't. You know, bills of rights aren't supposed to go into that. Statutory law does. And so you take the rights and you make the statutory law from that. Carrying on campus, changing the Fourth Amendment so that it doesn't say safe and secure in your houses. What is it? Houses, no, persons, houses, papers, and effects. It says persons, houses, arms, papers, and effects. So that your arms are covered by due process specifically. They're covered already, but it would be a more specific definition if we change the Fourth Amendment to include arms. Same thing with the Florida Constitution. Same thing with any constitution around the country that wants to do it. These are just basic common sense things that would strengthen our rights. And strengthening rights has nothing to do with criminals. You know, you don't increase crime by strengthening rights. You increase freedom. Well, criminals don't care about freedom because they're outside the law anyway. Freedom is a legal state. Liberty is a legal state. If you get rid of freedom and liberty, you know, as a criminal, you're not in a legal state. You're in an illegal state. State being a condition, not being a geographic location. It's a totally different argument.
Yeah, and right. And the respect for and the adherence to the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Articles of Confederation would become a societal norm.
Mm-hmm.
See, one of the problems you have with these courts, and they make these type of decisions that they make because they're not looking at the societal norm. Make it a societal norm. You look and see a female or a male carrying a weapon on their side, like a piece of apparel. It's a societal norm. And then people wouldn't rule or go against those societal norms. I hope that and would like to see the majority of the population believe in God. And then maybe they would take on the moral principles that's found in Bibles and other religious texts.
Now, that makes sense. In fact, this is why I love hearing about other religions and other beliefs. A lot of the beliefs are common, but a lot of them are different. You know, you talk to Chief Dan Skyhorse of the creation story, you know, from the Creek, and a lot of other American Indian and different tribes and nations that have come here or were always here. I don't really know for sure. That's where it gets really interesting, really ancient history. But it's fascinating. A lot of these stories are – the one thing that the stories have in common is belief in a higher power, that we're not it, that we are not the – you know, and we can't be it. It is impossible for us to be the ultimate power in the universe. You know, first of all, we die. Secondly, we don't have control over even, you know, much of anything. Although people say, you know, that, you know, we're the masters of the world. I don't think so. I think we're just kind of along for the ride, hoping, you know, and the best thing we can do is increase freedom, you know, for the folks that are with us at the time that we're here and the folks that come after us. That to me is the calling. So, you know, you look at all this stuff, it's very different, but the biggest problem is this government thinks somehow, or they've convinced people that the solution to criminal insanity is legislation. You know, murder's been illegal since time began, since Cain and Abel, and yet we've had laws against it, and yet it still occurs. So murder hasn't stopped because it's illegal. You have to stop the murderer. You know, and so they're asking the wrong question. So this idea of gun control disgusts me because, first of all, it's rights control, and controlling rights have never stopped a crime. They just don't, because people who exercise individual rights are not criminals. And once if you can't separate those two in your mind, if you can't separate illegal aliens, you know, from lawful immigrants, if you can't separate criminals from citizens exercising their rights, then you really can't understand this issue. And if any of the GOP geldings would simply explain it the way I just explained it, we'd have totally different debates. But no, they walk with their tail between their legs. They suck up to the Democrats and say, please don't beat us too badly in the news tonight. You know, don't call us racist. Oh, no. We'll something. We'll be good if you leave us, you know, we'll be good so you leave us alone. You know, the biggest cowards I've ever seen is the GOP. And I don't know what to do about that. You know, I sent out a massive press release last night on our bills, our gun bills. We'll see if anybody, you know, Matt Gaetz, where are you? I mean, I saw you on the news last night. Great, great investigation. I loved it. Okay, where are you on these bills? And where's our local folks? Where's Governor DeSantis? Where are our local representatives, people that are running for the Florida legislature? Where are you? Where are you on getting rid of the Stoneman Douglas bill problems? The only thing good about that was the Guardian program. Everything else about it sucked because it restrained rights of law-abiding citizens. And I don't think anybody can point to a single restriction on law-abiding citizens that ever stopped a crime.
Well, if they don't answer these problems that we have today with simple things like what you have mentioned, mm-hmm. then the ultimate is going to be what it is. You know, you dread an armed revolution, but it's not a guarantee that it won't happen. Mm-hmm. Because you can only kick a dog so much. You can corner a fox, but that fox was fight back viciously because it realized that its freedom and liberty at this point is between me and you.
Yeah. Well, it's like the government through force, through brute force, keeps trying to take away, you know, our options of freedom. You know, our best option is the election. Well, they've already stolen that. You know, the next thing is, you know, writing and calling and speaking to your representatives. Well, they don't want to talk to you. The people they talk to have money for their campaign, so they've taken away that. So your emails and letters, they do have some effect, but they don't have the effect that they used to have. Money talks. You know, so what's left?
Well,
and people get frustrated.
What,
you know, go ahead.
What you calling government brute force is tantamount to a gang rape. Would you engage? Would you join in a gang rape? But that's what you see is going on.
Mm-hmm.
These threats. You see the actions that's being imposed. You see mm-hmm. the intimidation that's going on in American citizens. It's tantamount to a gang rape of a female.
Yeah. Or a male. I mean, males get raped in prison. You know, so gang rape is gang rape. You know, and that's what the government's basically doing. You know, in fact, we could even label them the gang rape government. I mean, that's what they're doing to our country. They don't care how the election went. They wanted to pick their person. And what the irony is that their person, Brandon, actually thinks he is president and is trying to act like he's president and wonders why people are constantly contradicting what he says. He's, I'm president. Dude, you're not president. Okay, let's talk about that. All right, let me get on to an article here. We got a little bit of time before Wendy gets here. And when Wendy comes on, I want to play our new spot for Gulf Coast Patriots and Trump's birthday party coming up on June 11th. So I found this last night. And the reason I like the article is because I said the exact same thing yesterday. So I'm going to be honest, it's terrible. But I want to get Lee Williams on the show. Apparently he's a gun writer. He's been law enforcement. He's been special forces. He's been a bunch of different stuff. It's kind of like Jim Dykes in a way. You know, the guys that do this. We got to get Jim writing more and more opinions. Jim's on a cruise right now. And so you got to get his pictures. It's kind of funny. So the title of the article from the gun writer, Civil Rights Still Trump, a Politician's Need to, quote, do something after tragedy. He says, don't buy into the media's current narrative. The gun didn't do it. And this is by Lee Williams. And it was, I think, last night. He says, while most Americans were spending time with family this Memorial Day weekend, commemorating those who gave their lives in defense of this great country, a growing list of politicians and members of the gun ban industry, I love the way he talks, right, aided and abetted by their friends in the legacy media, were busy conspiring how best to strip away the very rights so many brave men and women died to defend. These public officials have desecrated the memory of 19 young children and two brave teachers by turning their senseless murders into a tool to force politicians on both sides of the aisle to do something. And the something they have in mind will further erode our civil rights. This is why I think gun ownership is a civil right. And this is why I wanted to have it included under the civil rights laws. He says, by Tuesday morning, they had successfully hijacked the narrative by focusing the public's attention on the gun and the gun maker, not the gun man, as if the weapon had a mind of its own and wielded itself. Rather than placing the blame where it belongs on the madman and the despicable police response that helped facilitate the killings, the politicians, gun banners, I would say gun phobes, and their lapdogs in the legacy media would have you believe that more laws would have prevented this senseless tragedy. As if laws prohibiting murder were not stringent enough and we need to do something, which always results in them gaining more political power at the cost of our civil rights. Yes, eroding rights never stop crimes. They just don't, because criminals don't express rights, because they're criminals. They're outside the law. You know, rights expression is a lawful constitutional exercise of your citizenship. That's what people don't understand. Constitutional rights are lawful. Criminals are not. Therefore, equating criminals with lawful constitutional rights is irrational. There is no comparison. There is no commonality. There is a wall of separation between the actions of criminals and constitutional rights. Trying to equate those two is what the Democrats are doing successfully. Bianchi, what do you think so far?
Dead on. You're absolutely right. The basis, everything has a basis. And this is what everything begins, and that's the U.S. Constitution.
Mm-hmm. And the Constitution is basically a limitation on government for what they can't do. The Bill of Rights is a bill of limitations on government. It's not a permission slip for what you can do. You've already got these rights. Understanding that is the thing, too.
Every human being, when he or she is born, they have all the rights that the universe can afford, cannot provide. And the only way you lose any, I mean, you can run butt naked down the street. What prevents you from doing that? Laws, ordinances. Well, that's the only way you can lose those inalienable rights is when a body, government body, makes up a law stopping it.
Yeah, but the problem is when the government makes up unjust laws. I mean, just laws are fine. You know, it's like when Thomas Jefferson said in the Declaration of Independence, the just powers of government, not the powers of government, but the just powers of government come from consent of the governed. Well, the governed would never consent to having their rights taken away. So the action of taking rights away goes against the consent of the government. Therefore, those powers are not just.
Absolutely. The consent of the government is very key there. It means that the people agree to it because they see a need and a value.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what Action Radio is all about. The whole point of this was to answer the question, how do we give our consent to be governed? I mean, that's the basis of the show. That's the basis of our citizen legislature. How do we give our consent to be governed? And the conclusion I came to is that we, and this is the mission statement of the show, it's pure and simple, straightforward. It hit me one day like a slap in the face. We give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a revolutionary concept.
Well, you know, elected officials should be the carriers or bearers of decrees made by the people that sent them there, not go to Washington or the State House and vote your heart-given consciousness. No, your heart-given consciousness may be different from somebody else. It's the decrees that the citizens tell you, this is what we want to have. And then you're supposed to vote to put it in effect.
Well, that's more of a democracy. See, in a republic, I want people to exercise their judgment. I want people to have the courage to do what's constitutional rather than what people want. If people wanted to have a $50 an hour minimum wage, should politicians vote for that? Well, it's what the people want. That's a democracy.
Well, you know, it gets down to those areas that they live in. Now, like I said before, you got a basic that you have to that guide you, and that is the U.S. Constitution. It protects you from the overreach and the ravages of the federal government.
Well, it protects us from democracy, if you want to get down to it. You know, corporations buy public opinion. You know, you look at the things that people demonize. You look at all the people that took the vaccine. Their public opinion was bought or coerced or was forced. First, they tried to buy it with advertising. You know, they tried to buy it with media news propaganda. Then they tried to coerce it. You know, you might lose your job. And then they mandated it. You will lose your job.
You're right.
So they escalated the force, and none of that was the consent of the government.
And what you're seeing is the plagiarization of the Constitution and realizing the fact that this whittling away and chipping away of your liberties is an evolutionary thing.
Yeah.
The things that we're seeing today have evolved into what they are, but they did not exist, say, 100 years ago. It wasn't even on someone's radar.
Well, Congress works on the serial killer mentality. We'll keep doing it until you stop us. All right? And so people...
You're absolutely right.
Thank you. But what Action Radio also needs to do, first of all, we need 10 million listeners. And then we can really start to affect the national debate. So if you're not sharing the show, you're not helping. So share the show. But the thing is, once, you know, we need to tell people that of the dangers of democracy, of the dangers of being coerced by big pharma, big media, big tech, big government into voting for things that give them more power, even though you don't know it. And the biggest argument is safety. We're going to do something to stop these murders. Well, there's actually nothing they can do because this isn't a legal situation. This is, you know, these people that are doing this are outside the law. And if they're outside the law, they're outside the powers of the legislature. So let me ask you a moral question. In fact, we have a great guest coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Lisa Babbage, who I met at Systematic Deception. the film about black conservatives in the Democrat Party. And I was going to ask her the same question, but I want to ask you, you know, if murder were legal, would the rate of murder appreciably go up?
Well, the murderers don't look at it being wrong as it is now.
All right. But what I'm saying is, you know, we all have a moral code. Murderers have no moral code because they're sociopaths. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to do it. Murder is illegal, and yet people still do it. But the question is, you take the average American. If murder were legal, and this is purely theoretical because I don't want to make murder legal. I'm not talking about that. But I'm saying if it were legal, how many Americans would suddenly engage in murder as part of their lifestyle, like they do burgers on the weekend kind of thing?
Well,
you know, would that be a way to resolve conflict?
Yeah, the reason they don't is because of fear of punishment. But you think about this. People talk about suspending the Constitution. If you suspend the Constitution, basically murder is legal. What's to say it's not? What's the punishment?
No, because it's still statutory. It's still illegal by statute. But what I'm saying is, how many people are basically good that wouldn't do it because they have a moral code? I mean, you and I are basically good. You know, we wouldn't commit murder because it's against our beliefs. It's against our philosophy. It's against our humanity. It's against everything we stand for as people. We do it. We don't need a religious code to tell us not to do it. We just know it's wrong. Now, it helps that it's a religious code, but the Bible says thou shalt not murder. It doesn't say thou shalt not kill. That's part of the distortion. But the question is, what percent of people would, you know, I mean, there would be, if murder were legal, there would definitely be an increase in murders because the people would go, oh, I can get away with it. You know, and they would do it because there's no penalty. But the question is, how many people would not do it even if it were legal? So this is the definition of good. Are people that don't do things even if they're not against the law, you know, because it's the right thing to do.
That's a whole different realm. But okay. if you have no supreme law, all other lesser laws like state statutes would disappear because it's the supreme law that allows states to exist, state statutes to exist. It would go away.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask another question. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just like going back in the time and knocking on the door when your mother and father was getting ready to get into the act, and all of a sudden it stops. So you stop, right?
Yeah. That's a scary thought for my parents. Of course, it's a scary thought for all of our parents. But anyway, I know what you're saying. Yeah. Here's a question too, though. It's interesting thought. Where is I going to go with this here?
Thought-provoking questions are good.
Yeah, they sure are. But I was thinking, too, that if you're talking about the ability to defend yourself as a civil right, I mean, how many people, if murder were legal, how many people would do it? But how many people would take someone's life to save somebody else's life? In other words, how many people have the moral courage, moral fortitude to go in as this Border Patrol person did and basically kill the person who was murdering other people? There's a question,
well,
too.
Well, you know, the best way to stop murders is that inalienable right of self-defense.
Right.
If you don't understand that and don't practice that, at some point in time you will.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to become a natural, it's a learning experience. You know, you can see a mother moose with two calves, and a bear come up and kill one. She just look. And may tell the other one, come on, let's go. But one of them's gone. Mm-hmm. But at some point in time, Mother Moose will learn. And, you know, she wasn't born with nothing that she can use as a weapon like horns and that. But something would evolve out of that experience if the one that's being attacked and being cast upon with genocide will learn how to turn the tables on that which is attacking it.
Well, how do animals learn that, though? You know, I mean, we talk about instinct, but most animals have a sense of self-preservation. They have no sense of, we don't think they have a sense of their life, you know, as mortal as opposed to, I don't think animals have a concept of death. They just keep going, you know, as long as they can. But at some point, animals defend themselves. You know, and I don't know if the parent animals teach the younger animals how to defend themselves. I mean, some animals.
Well, yeah, humanoids learn from animals. They learn from plants. They learn from fowls, the birds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, they learn from nature. How else would they get to the point where they are if they didn't? They had to have a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Well, it goes, you know, you take a look at predatory animals, teaching the young how to hunt. You know, that goes for the cats and the birds of prey and things like that. They teach the young how to hunt. Otherwise, you know, wolves especially, they teach the young how to do that. You know, but I would just wonder how much of our own human experiences is taught, how much is instinctive. You know, isn't there a certain percentage of the population with a natural instinct of right and wrong, even if they weren't taught?
Well, yeah, now, at this point in time in our evolution, yes, there is. You ever watch birds in a nest that's developed? The mother bird, at some point in time, that mother bird, which had fed those birds to the point where they have wings and feathers,
mm-hmm.
then if you hear a lot of racket going on in the backyard in the tree,
yeah.
that's that mother bird telling these baby birds, it's time for you to get up and go.
Yep.
And she would keep up a lot of racket till she just basically scared them out the nest. If she didn't, they just sit there and wait for her to bring a worm and drop down his throat.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many birds enjoy that new freedom once they leave? You know, it's like kids that are reluctant to leave the house don't realize the freedom that they're missing by being in the house because they have rules that they're not making.
Well, the birds got a responsibility in nature. They okay. add to the ecosystem. And even though at a young age they don't realize, they have to be made to realize. They have to be taught to realize your responsibility to life. Everyone plays a part of the continuation of life, good, wholesome life. And if you don't exercise your part, then life may come to an end.
Well, let's bring that to teachers then. In schools, we force kids to go to these institutions, which are built like prisons. We force them in there. We force them with teachers who are not their parents. We force them to learn things, many of which they shouldn't be learning. They're not learning things they should be learning. And yet we put them in a place where they're vulnerable, where the school resource officers aren't there. The ones that are there have killed people walking into the schools with guns. You don't hear about that, but it happens. So a lot of these guardian programs are very successful. You don't hear about the people that weren't killed, you know, because a school resource officer, a law enforcement officer, you know, basically stopped, in other words, shot somebody walking into a school with a gun with intent to commit murder. But the thing is, if we're going to put people in these situations as individuals, so let's go back to our basic argument that you know, that there are people with a certain, you know, instinct and quality of good, and those who learned good, and those who have gotten good from religion, the moral code, and everything else, and so they're good people. You know, they're not out there committing all kinds of crimes and things like that. So those people should be armed, because those people are guarding the kids, and if they can't guard the kids in themselves, you know, if you take that away from them, then you take a good person with the instinct to do the right thing, and you're removing the ability of them to do the right thing. So who's the real murderer? I would say the government at this point. The government, in collusion with the criminally insane, are committing murder by these people that are out there and not allowing people the correct response and the tools to stop them. So who really committed the murder?
Well,
in that
government
school?
Can.
The government, ultimately.
You're right. Throughout history, we have found where governments have become dens of evil.
Yeah.
There's two conscious forces. One's good, what has been identified based on actions and what we observe. Mm-hmm. One's good, one's evil. Those conscious forces.
Yeah. Well, you know, the paragraph of this article here, it says, sadly, by forcing the public to focus on the gun itself, the real culprits are escaping scrutiny. The deranged madman, may he rot in hell, could not possibly have taken so many innocent lives were it not for the inexplicable actions of a senior Uvalde police official who prevented tactical teams from doing their job, in this case, breaching the classroom door and shooting the madman in the face. While the Department of Justice is conducting an after-action review at the behest of the Uvalde mayor, which will likely hold this idiotic police official accountable, the DOJ review will take months. We need accountability now, so nothing like this can ever happen again. Similarly, tactical team commanders across the country need to know that if they're ordered to stand down and wait while children are being murdered, they can choke whoever is stupid enough to issue such an obviously illegal order, make entry, shoot the bad guy in the face, and the public will have their backs. In fact, their actions will be celebrated. This isn't the first time police have waited. Okay.
Well,
so here's
it's
another
a natural
reason.
Thing, Rick.
What's
it's
that?
It's a natural thing. You can't hire people who's going to run into danger. And then if they don't run into danger, how are you going to punish them? By taking their life? Well, hell, if that's the case, they would have ran into the danger. It's a natural thing for life to preserve itself before it even attempts to preserve somebody else. Hey, when you're on a passenger jet, and if you run into a problem of evacuation of oxygen in the cabin, and the mask drop down, what did they tell you to do? Put your mask on first before you try to help the person next to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're going to pass out if you don't. You have to put your mask on first. But let me put it this way. As a flight instructor, I faced students who were, scared. I faced weather because I purposely put us in it. I had gear that failed to drop, and I pumped it down on a couple of occasions, probably because we did too many gear cycles during the lesson and it overheated. But we still had to pump it down. I had an engine quit on me once on a lesson. Stuff happens. We got it restarted. So I didn't make the news that night. But, I always dealt with those things. It never occurred to me to not deal with it. So the idea of me, if I was a law enforcement officer, would I go into a dangerous situation? Yeah, without hesitation. And I think that's one of the benefits of age. You get older and you think it doesn't matter. I've lived, I've done more than most people will ever do already, and I'm not done. So to me, walking into a dangerous situation would not be an issue. Yeah.
Everyone can't do that, though.
That's true.
And you can't
don't be police officers.
Them because they refuse.
Wait a minute, if you can't walk into a dangerous situation, how can you be a police officer if you're not willing to walk into a dangerous situation? Isn't that why you're hired?
Because there's other things that police officers can do, like write tickets. But you have iron workers that walk 300 feet in the air walking across an object that's only 6 inches wide. Yeah. Everybody can't do it.
Yeah, the Mohawk can. The Mohawk have no fear of heights. It's really quite interesting. So a lot of construction workers in Canada were Mohawk Indians, which is quite interesting. Yeah,
I worked
to work
with them on a project in Detroit. You're absolutely right, but not all of them. It's just like anything else. You have an uncanny a gift with yourself that you do that other people don't. It's just the way it is. That's the throw of the dice. That's the way it came out.
Personal tragedies. There's not much left to be afraid of. So I think that's there's something to be said for having a crazy life and having a lot of things happen to you that, each time and you survive, you go, oh, I got through that. That was interesting. Got through that trauma. Got through
and
that
you
crisis.
Know, this is another
and I'm
point.
5 years old and I'm still here. So,
here's another point.
Yeah.
There was a solution. See, there's always what we call a cause and effect. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you have police officers that didn't want to run into that danger. But if the teachers had have been armed, would that danger gotten to the level that it was? Is it cause and effect?
Mm-hmm.
No, it wouldn't. Like, we all know that no matter how bad a person seemingly be, and they've got a weapon of convenience in this particular time frame, because you go back 1,000 years, it's probably a club or a stick with a rock tied to it. Yeah. But the weapon of convenience being what it is today, people have a different association with what the fear is. Now, it's one thing that they know the power they got in their hand, all right? But they don't want to see somebody on the other end with that same convenience shooting back at them.
Yeah, that's true.
You want to stop a lot of this activity that's going on with guns. See, it's just like when a hornet goes into a bee's nest. Hornet know the bees ain't going to do nothing to it, so it go in there and kill up a whole hive.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when the bee get to the point where it knows how to defend off a hornet and kill the hornet? Then the tables are going to be turned. It's the same way in animal life. And humans are nothing more than extensions of mammals.
There's a documentary or one of the YouTubes I saw is really disgusting. The giant hornets, the Asian giant hornets, when they go to the European beehives, the European bees haven't evolved the technique of how to stop the hornets. So entire hives will be destroyed. Five giant hornets can kill, tens of thousands of bees. Whereas the Asian bees, the honeybees have learned how to deal with a hornet, and they surround it and they actually heat it up and it overheats and dies. So they kill the one hornet that discovered the hive before it can get back to the other hornets. And that's how the hives survive. So the same bees, basically the same bees, but one of them over evolution have gotten smart enough to deal with the giant hornets. Same thing with people. Eventually people are going to get smart enough to deal with governments. It hasn't happened yet. I'm hoping that we're around to watch it. Yeah. Well, let's go with the bee philosophy. Just imagine all of us are bees. Okay. And that everybody starts picking up on the idea that, that the people are the source of legislation. See, currently, and this is, I think, one of our biggest stumbling blocks, people still think that laws are written by legislators, whereas they should be analyzed, put through committee, studied, and voted on by legislators. But there's absolutely no reason why the people cannot supply the laws to the legislators that the people consent to be governed by. And, of course, people are going to then say, but, Greg, you're writing most of these bills yourself, you know, you and your friends and your people on Action Radio. I said, okay, show me which bills you've got a problem with. Show me where we have done something that goes against freedom. Show me where any of these bills is going to lessen the quality of your life, the quality of your civil rights, the quality of anything. Go ahead. And you know, I've asked people that. Show me any bill that actually takes away our freedom. And, of course, they can't because there isn't one. So, yes, we are advancing this because no one's ever done it before. But you look at any bill that we do, anything we talk about, look at your bill, you know, separating the balance between federal and state. That increases freedom because that increases the honesty of the election process. So that is critical to our freedom. That's why it's a good bill.
It's like a fair message. Look what happens when you take the liability responsibility off the backs of pharmacists. They just run buck wild.
Mm-hmm,
they're just like a killer.
Mm-hmm.
A killer will go into a mall and continuously shoot people until when? Until somebody else shoot back at them.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting is there's a disconnect because they don't seem to think that somebody won't shoot them. Well, that's not true because then they go into places where the chances are far less likely. And the chance in a Buffalo liberal black neighborhood of people having, you know, carrying concealed is less than any other neighborhood in the country with any, well, I shouldn't use the racial group, but the fact is that liberal places, people are not carrying guns to the extent that conservative places are. You know, you don't see Kennesaw, Georgia, you know, with mass killings and shootings in malls. In fact, I think if we did a study, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any place where a large percentage of gun owners have any kind of mass shootings. What do you think?
No, you don't, because there's that deterrence. That deterrence of we can inflict pain on you as you are trying to inflict pain on us.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a natural. That's just the way it works.
Yeah, I'm sending a quick note to Wendy here. I'm wondering where she is. Wendy, where are you? It's time for because we got Chancey Terry at 8:30, and then we've got Lisa Babbage who's going to be on. And, she's one of the folks in the film. Have you seen this film, Systematic Deception? Black conservatives take on the Democrat Party.
Have I did what now?
Have you seen that film? That's okay. Yeah, we all get. I get distracted too.
I probably have.
Yeah.
I probably have. Yes. It's a good topic, though.
The two groups of folks that are right now the largest contributors and growing fastest, I think, for Action Radio are black conservatives and women gun owners. You know, and so we have a lot of friends. You know, go ahead.
When I go to the range, when I go to some ranges, there's a lot of black women there that's learning how to shoot. The thing with the black conservatives, they are saying enough is enough, and they are starting to come out, and the curtailment of black conservatives with other blacks, especially in positions, in employment. You work for a school district, and you start doing opposite of what people are complaining about today that's going on in the classroom, then you subject it, and I have seen this, to get ridiculed and possibly removed.
Yeah, that's a whole new topic. Is that the black folks that are against black conservatives, and it's going to be, you know, interesting. I also want to talk to. I'll wait till Lisa comes on. She's an educator, really intelligent. She's quite fascinating. But the idea I proposed probably a few months ago now, that black folks are no longer the chosen constituency of the Democrats. That as black conservatives are abandoning the Democrat Party, Democrats are abandoning black folks in this country. It's not obvious. It's not really being seen yet. But I think that this is the whole push to get these illegal aliens in the country, is that the Democrats have a new chosen, you know, constituency, that they have a new peasant class for themselves, a new plantation. certainly a plantation mentality, and that's what's happening. So we'll get to that too. We got a lot of things to talk about.
Have been schooled. Those illegals have been schooled and coached more likely. You know, you've seen a lot of them with Joe Biden t-shirts on. Well, hell, anybody at the local store where they started off there on their journey, they've been coached. And like you say, you got blacks that is realizing through education and other means that what they have been bamboozled with for so many years, decades, really, in some cities, St. Louis, 72 years, of Miami forever, El Paso, Texas forever, are they realizing as they begin to be educated and be able to pull out of the U.S. System of existence and also to be able to contribute to it, they understand exactly how they've been bamboozled and being able to see it anyway.
Yeah, I got to ask Lisa this question too. Is there a difference in the education of black students in the government schools? Are there specific black programs to, is critical race theory taught very differently in black schools? Is there a lack of ambition? Is there an attitude black students will never go anywhere, so what's the point of teaching them X, whatever X is? You know, do they design curricula in these planning school boards? You know, in other words, are school boards gearing an education to black students as opposed to students? Is that going on?
Well, you have elements within these communities that push and propose some of these radical thoughts.
Yeah.
If you want to call them radical thoughts. And as I said, the critical race theory is designed to shame whites in many cases.
So is it not taught in predominantly black school districts? That would be interesting. That would be something fascinating. I'd be curious.
See, technically, you're not supposed to teach something like that in a school district because what you're doing, you are trying to prop up one ethnic group and shame another over another. It's supposed to be a pure balance. But if you start teaching like some of these voices and some of these factions want, it's designed to shame whites. I don't know what's going to gain from that, especially the kids. See, if you start with those children, you indoctrinate them into a certain thought pattern and a certain shamefulness, well, then they will behave in a particular way when they get older. You know what their sentiments are. You can play off of it.
Yeah, it's much too much planning. it's much, much government indoctrination. And again, the question is when people are going to throw off, you know, like I said, eventually they're going to fight back. I'm curious when white folks are going to start fighting back. Candace Owens was on with Tucker last night, and she talked about the head of Black Lives Matter, who says, well, it's not my fault the white guilt gave me millions of dollars and I bought, you know, several mansions and started a real estate empire. It's not my fault. You know, and it's right. She's actually right. It's not her fault. You know, it's people who have the stupid case of white guilt. This is why I made that whole thing on the January white sale. That's not against black people. It's against liberal white people.
Well, you know, one of the best things is the best thing, but it was an example. When whites leave these areas, and then everything is put in the hands of blacks themselves. Now, you got a lot of good things that's coming out of education with the educational system with black, but when you look at certain areas, it's just deplorable. And there's no whites control in these areas. Now, somebody would try to come up with a mythical white face someplace, but when you go looking for it, you can't find it.
Yeah. Are there...
It's like the day. It's like these days. You know, people say that what they want. Well, when you hear someone come with you with that, what the day is, ask them, what's the day's email address? What's their postal house address? What's their telephone number? How do we get a hold of these days so that they can defend themselves? Because everybody want to jump on the days.
What do you mean the days? I'm not sure what you're talking about.
In the conversation, in the excuse, they won't let us.
Oh, they's. Okay, I'm sorry. It's block talk. It's not always the clearest signal. Yeah, you know, they're responsible. You know, they did it. You know, who's they? That's a good question. Well, here's a question, too. In liberal, black, Democrat-controlled cities, do they discourage businesses? Do they discourage white-owned businesses? Do they discourage black-owned businesses? Are they maintaining their poverty to maintain their status and their power and their grants and their, you know, all the money they get? I mean, is this basically a criminal enterprise that's denying people the ability to engage in commerce as they choose? Is that going on?
Well, when you have prosecutors like alleged that the one in St. Louis, Kim Gardner, tell the police if you come upon shoplifters and they look like they need what they stole, don't charge her. That there will be.
That's a standard of justice. If people need to commit a crime,
yeah,
well, what if an embezzler needs the money from a company? What if an accountant needs to cheat? What if an investor, you know, needs, you know, Bernie Madoff? Well, I need the money. What's the problem here? Is that her logic? That's great. How about the gun person that goes, you know, to extremes? Well, I needed to shoot those people in Waco, the FBI agent said. You know, I needed to. It's part of my job. That's an interesting standard of justice. Hey, we got about 15 minutes before Chancey gets here, so we're kind of open things up. I want to get back just briefly to the do something theme. And what is it about our country, and how can we change this idea that we put it on the legislators to do something? We put it on them to come up with the solutions, whereas people don't think that they can have the solutions themselves and go to them. And then, like I said, this is the basis of our show, is what we're saying is we have the solutions. We the people. And I put them up publicly, and anybody's willing to challenge to take a look and comment, and people do. It's quite interesting, actually. And people do post bills. You know, I have to get to a lot of them. I'm kind of busy lately. But the thing is that we do have solutions, and we the whole idea of this is to give government the solutions they hear. From all the solutions you get, from the corporate ones, from the other government ones, from the political parties, you know, here's one from us, just as regular folks out here, that's another source of solutions. We happen to think our solutions are better because they increase freedom. Now, how do we get to the population? And instead of having the attitude that the government should do something, you know, the people should do something, like fight for more concealed carry and then constitutional carry. But they don't do it. People are unwilling to fight on their own behalf and their own best interest. And I don't know how to fight that. Maybe it's always been that way.
Well, I don't think that people entirely, not all, but a lot, mm-hmm. don't understand the workings in the hierarchy of government.
Okay.
I would imagine there's people that would call the White House when a tree has fallen in the alley.
Yes, they're calling 911 asking for directions. We had a state legislator that used to do that in California. She wanted directions to, you know, someplace, and she called 911, and the operator said, this is not the purpose of this call. I'm a state legislator. I can do whatever I want. Oh, really? I think there's the problem right there. Yeah, they do that.
Well, she should have been recalled.
I'm not sure what happened, but I know this is a famous case. I see Maxine Waters doing that. I don't know why her face came to mind, but it just did. All right, let's talk about a couple things in the news. We got a little bit of time, or I should play one of our I keep meaning to do our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. Probably the best time to do that is now, because once Chancey gets here, it's going to be a little tougher. Then we got Lisa in the second hour. And I know we're going to have a lot to talk about. So let me play you a Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, and then I'll do my new Trump promo for Trump's birthday party, and we shall be back in a little bit. And anybody else who wants to talk about that theme of this whole do something syndrome, I think it's one of the biggest problems with government, and that's that if we can change anything, that is definitely something we need to change. Let me see if I can play something. I don't think I played this for a while. Let me give you the intro to what we do with the Santa Rosa Volunteers. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com. srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. Yeah, unfortunately, it took a little longer than each week to do these, but we also expanded them greatly beyond the original 1 or 2 minutes. And once I started getting into the founding documents, the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist paper, it's like 6 or 7 minutes. And even then, I'm cutting a lot of stuff out, so there's much more we could say about that. Looks like we got Wendy here briefly for a little bit, so I'm going to quickly play my Trump bit, get to her, and then we'll get to Chansey. I'll probably hold Chansey up just a little bit also. This is Greg Penglis, host of Action Radio. Greetings, patriots from all across the Panhandle and from the Gulf Shores of Alabama and Mississippi. In conjunction with the Escambia Federated Republican Women, the Gulf Coast Patriots is hosting a huge birthday celebration to honor President Trump. Saturday, June 11th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., the Ultra Mega Festival and Trump Birthday Party at the Santa Rosa County Fairgrounds, 8604 Bobby Brown Road in Milton, Florida. All conservative groups are specially invited. Bring your family and friends for fun and games, music, food, meet and greet the candidates, pony rides for the kiddies, show off your mega gear and America First swag. This is a tailgate-style event, so bring your chairs, tables, and tents. Come celebrate the birthday of the only person to be both the 45th and 46th president at the same time, our president, Donald Trump. Happy birthday, President Trump, and thank you for what you gave us. You gave us pride in our nation again. You made America First a goal that not only could be achieved, but was. Thank you for $1.85 gasoline and so much energy we could export it. Thank you for putting us on a level playing field with China. Thank you for not surrendering in Afghanistan and for trying to end the war there and everywhere we were involved. Thank you for not letting Russia invade Ukraine and North Korea for not testing nuclear missiles. Thank you for so many accomplishments when the entire Washington, D.C. deep state and the National Socialist media were against you. So let us just say now, happy birthday, Mr. President. See you all at the party, Saturday, June 11th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Santa Rosa County Fairgrounds. All right, I'm going to sort of skip Wendy's theme because we have a little abbreviated show. Wendy got tied up for a little bit. So, Wendy, you missed our great creation debate with Bill, the Bible expert, earlier in the show.
But my phone is kind of getting funky this morning, so sometimes it comes in and comes out. Am I coming through clear?
Oh, you sound fine, yeah. We got the first giggle, right. So I know life is good. Yeah, we're good.
Yes, life is good. Well, I'm sorry for being late, everybody. We just had a little incident this morning, so had to
that's
go
okay.
ahead and
stuff happens.
Take care of business.
Hello, and
you're here.
Yeah, stuff happens.
Yeah,
it's true. Good morning. How are y'all?
We're having a great time.
We're fine.
This has been a We're kind of all over the place this morning. My basic theme was the do-something syndrome of government. And Bill started off talking about the Creation Museum and the Ark, which he had an absolutely fabulous time with. So, of course, I had to ask him questions. You know, and this he talked about Ken Ham. Do you know this person?
No, I don't.
Okay. Apparently he started these two things and does debates this guy Bill Nye on creation versus evolution. So I want to try and get him on the show. I think it'd be fascinating to hear that. But the whole idea, I don't know, I got 5 minutes. What are we going to do? Intelligent design versus creation. Bill was going through basically a biblical history of creation. And I want to sort of reach more into that and get into the whole idea of an intelligent design, that everything works incredibly. You know, you look at the laws of physics, the laws of chemistry, the laws of biology.
Amazingly.
It all works. And to think that that wasn't designed intelligently, that's all some cosmic accident. I mean, I'm not a gambler, but if I went to Vegas and said, what are the odds that the universe is going to work out like this? You know, Wendy, what are the odds?
Yeah. Like, never.
Exactly.
There isn't even a spread. I mean, it just wouldn't have worked. So, no, this is all definitely the intelligent design of God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit working in conjunction to make sure everything was perfect the way, you know, he created it to be. And it was fashioned after himself, so how could it not? And, you know, for those who are just dead set on having to believe in evolution and all that kind of stuff, well, you know, man has gotten to where we are right now, and we have never changed. This is it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't ever see evolution continuing on. So I don't understand, because evolution, that is its very nature. It has to keep evolving. And we don't. We are here. Our bodies are the way we are, and we function the way we function, and hearts still, you know, function the way they do, and eyes still function the way they do. Things don't change over the years. You know, this is just how we're made, and gloriously made. So it takes more faith to believe in evolution than I've got.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a leap of faith. The thing that just kind of happened in some primordial soup. Oh, get real. Well, of course, then, you know, me, I asked the crazy questions, like, were, you know, in the Garden of Eden, were there predators? I asked Bill, I said, you know, why would God design a world where almost everything tries to eat almost everything else? Why is that the structure of our world here? I mean, it works, you know, and the strongest do survive. And I think there's a lot of confusion with evolutionists between evolution and adaptation. But the question is, it's an interesting thought, you know, and does that go back to the Garden of Eden? Is there anything in scripture that talks about, you know, the wolves and the sheep, the falcons and the pigeons, you know, the bears and the, I don't know, rabbits. I'm trying to understand, you know, what was the Garden of Eden a place where there were predators? And was that part of the design? How's that for a question?
That is a good question, and here's my thought. Now, I do not. This is not a thus saith the Lord. Okay, this is just me musing.
Okay,
but
we'll
because,
do it next week too.
Eden was designed to represent heaven. You know, everything got along. Everything worked in harmony. There weren't any factions, things like that. So I don't believe that there was predators as we know it.
Okay.
In the Garden of Eden, I think pretty much everything was a herbivore, and they didn't require having to eat something else as far as, you know, another animal to survive, because as we see and pictured in the scriptures, that when in heaven, you know, the wolf will lay down with the lamb, the lions and snakes and whatever has been created is going to get along just fine. There's nobody's going to eat anything else in heaven is to survive. Because number one, you don't need to physically eat to survive in heaven, although you can if you want to, simply because it's a joyful thing. So, and there's certain foods in heaven anyway that we don't have down here yet.
There's no burgers in heaven?
But
now you tell me. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, I didn't say there weren't any burgers now.
Oh, okay. I want to check.
We don't have down here yet.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Matter of fact, there's an amazing tree that has 12 different fruits on it, on one tree.
Wow.
So how's that for awesome? So, you know.
Going to screw around with mass production, I'll tell you that right now. Sorry.
Yeah, so I mean, things that we know down here is just going to be blown away by what's actually up there. So as far as predators go, no, I that's just my musings. I don't think there were predators in the Garden of Eden.
Okay. Well, somehow they figured it out.
Well, after the fall, you know,
yeah.
Think about it. It happened to man and beast because
that was my next
God
question.
Yeah, because, you know, God cursed the soil due to Adam's, you know, stupidity, and
right.
And you had
blame
to
the man.
Toil and
blame
sweat
the man.
And work.
That's where this got started. Blaming the man. It's always the man's fault. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, actually, you know, throughout all of history is everybody has blamed Eve, but it flat out says that she was the one who was deceived by what the serpent was saying. Adam was standing right there with her. She wasn't having that conversation alone. Adam was right there, heard everything, knew better, and still let her take it. And he was like, oh, let her die and see if God will just create me another one. Yeah, let's see if this really works.
So he wanted to trade up? He wanted another trophy Eve? Nobody in the world has discussions like we do on Action Radio. I'm here to tell you, folks, if you think you're going to find this anywhere else, you're not. It just doesn't happen.
I know. Well, I don't want to eat into anybody else's time, but I apologize for being late this morning.
That's okay.
But
can you stick around for a while? Do you have a little time that says hang out with Chancey, or do you have to go?
This morning I have to go. Somebody totaled our car carrier yesterday for Mike's chair.
Oh no!
And not fun. So yeah, we're gonna go take care of some business.
Okay. Well, we'll pick up all our questions that you can't answer in one show next week. How's that?
Okay.
Do you have the list? You must have the list. Do you go over our podcast and write down and say, well, Greg said this and then Greg said that, and I can't answer that either. So let me see what else Greg said that I can't answer. I mean, do you do that after the show? I'm just curious.
Well, actually, next week we are going to pick up where we should have gone today, which is not only did Jesus show himself after his resurrection, but other saints had come out of the grave as well. And nobody ever talks about that. So we're going to gather, talk about that next week.
I want to hear that. That's going to be fascinating. Well, listen, you take care. Take care of Mike, and we will see you all next week.
Okay.
All right,
bye, guys.
Bye, Wendy. What is health? What does it take to stay healthy? We have a longer lifespan than 100 years ago, but is the quality of life any better? 100 years ago, their food was better. They got more exercise. They weren't as fat. They didn't have preservatives, antidepressants, sugar in everything, and they didn't have vaccines. If you talk about alternative healthcare, people think of crystals, incense, strange candles, crystal balls, Ouija boards, notions, potions, lotions, and total hippies telling you to detox, man. So let's change our system of sick care into wellness. Let's get healthy. Let's lower our stress, stop taking in poisons, eat and drink organic, clean food, and let's have a chat with Chancey Terry, because this is Wine, Weed, and Wellness Wednesday. So from a wellness perspective, even though we've fallen from the Garden of Eden, is there any particular problem with meat, or is that, or should we all be vegetarians?
I love meat.
Okay. Good morning, Chancey.
Good morning.
So I like to start off with something profound, just because as soon as the theme's playing, my mind, the ADHD brain immediately jumps really fast to about 15 different questions. And I figure, what can I ask? And, as we get going here. So, and you had a chance to listen in for a little bit. So feel free to comment or continue on with your topic du jour.
No. Yeah. Just love listening to all the things and people's opinions and all that. And definitely when you ask about the meat, it's a controversial thing, and people like to throw the baby out with the bathwater, which is what we've talked about, just like with anything else. But the source of your meat is where your problem is. And if people were to pay more attention to that, then they would understand that it's like that with everything. So, yeah, when the body needs protein in that form, is where I believe. So, yeah.
Well, there's differences in protein, isn't there? That's a really interesting point. The animal protein is different than vegetable protein. I eat a lot of avocados. Yeah. I also eat a lot of salmon. So I'm getting, and it's always wild caught. It's not farm. I'm not going to eat farm salmon.
Yeah.
Eggs are organic. Yeah. But there's a difference. I mean, and the difference in between vegetable protein. I mean, they're both proteins, but structurally, anatomically, aren't they different? Don't they do different things in your body?
Yes, they do. And I don't know them as the moment passes, but yeah, there's different ones that you got to get from
next week.
Things.
Make a note, future reference. This show is such a workshop, and a lot of what we do is this is what I never expect anybody to do, is to be able to answer one of my outrageous questions at the spur of the moment. It's like, that's interesting. Let's Wendy's going to, she's going to come back another week now to answer a question I asked before, who saw Jesus after the resurrection? And now we found out there were saints that were walking around too. And I want to hear that story. Go ahead, Jesse.
Who saw Jesus after the resurrection? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Apparently he was walking around Jerusalem. No. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't talk about things like that. This is why I'm having a show where we talk about things that nobody else talks about. So if you want to hear those things, you got to come here.
Yeah.
So what's going on? Well, yeah. What have you been doing lately?
Yeah, so so much stuff. I don't even know where to get started with what's going on in Chancey's life. But where I was going today was where the body stores emotions. Everybody is in all kinds of emotional turmoil here lately with the shootings and the killings and the formula and the all the stuff that they try to keep us in a fear mentality. And so where I wanted to start was if our emotions are not resolved, they will be stored in certain areas of the body.
Okay.
Over time, as these emotions accumulate, it will cause physical pain and symptoms in that area. And I believe this to be true because of the people that I work on, and usually mm-hmm. I can ask them where they're hurting or what problems they have, and then I can usually tell them have you been going through this or have you been going through this? And they're like, well, actually I have. And so kind of goes off of what Wendy was saying. Our bodies were made in his image, and they're wonderful bodies, and they're always trying to tell us something. And so if we listen to the body and we kind of just dive in a little bit and ask the body what's going on, it'll tell us, because pain is always, or pain or dis-ease is always something trying to get your attention. And that's where we have been told to take a pill for this and then just ignore the headache. It'll go away. Or ignore the stomach pain.
No, if you have headache
pain,
for a reason. Yeah, this is
right.
A perfect topic, because I've said this before, that if I have a headache, something's usually bothering me. And once I find out what's bothering me, my headache goes away. And I've heard this before, too, that pain and anguish and guilt and regret and, all these different things and depression, they reside in different places in your body. So this is fascinating. Please continue.
Yes. So, like with the emotions that store in your lungs, skin, and large intestines.
Mm-hmm.
That would be something that you had where if you start having breathing problems, decreased oxygen in the blood, or constipation. So that's your stomach, your gut, your liver, gallbladder, just depending on what you think of as your large intestine. So like your lungs, your skin, and your large intestine. So if you have sadness, depression, those things can come with breathing problems, decreased oxygen, and constipation. So look into, am I always sad? Am I always, do you eat bad? And then that causes you to be sad and depressed, which is usually where it's at. The body's doing what it's supposed to be doing. But if you're putting bad things in and it's getting into your large intestine, which your colon is attached to your lungs, usually. So if you have
No, I want to hear that again. The colon is attached to the lungs?
Yes. And so in some way, the bacteria.
How does that work?
I don't know the answer to that. But I just
Uh-oh.
Know that whatever you put up your butt, if you do suppositories or if you do colonics or if you do anything like that, it clears your lungs because all of it's connected.
Oh.
So it's kind of like the bacteria in your gut
mm-hmm.
and your colon affect your air, the sacs of your lungs and all of that kind of stuff, because the body works in an amazing way. And I just trust it and I just do it and it usually works. So if you put essential oils and you put CBD and you put things in the derriere, it definitely cleans the lungs. So you'll have people that have kids and they won't take cough syrup or they won't take antibiotics, which they don't need to, but if they don't take medicine and they won't swallow it, you can do a suppository or you can do things up the derriere and it will clear their lungs.
I'd rather change my diet, but thanks for
yes, I know.
this is an interesting day for a breakfast conversation. Pianchi, do you have a comment, Pianchi? I thought I heard him there.
Well, I'm listening and learning.
Yeah.
We always
it's
do.
It's a fun time to be alive. Well,
so,
and if you look at it, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, for depression especially, I went through a really bad bout of it several years ago before I got to Action Radio going. In fact, Action Radio, and to a large extent, got me back on track with so many different things. It's quite fascinating. But are there depression foods, do these – well, let me ask that question first, then I'll ask the meds question. Is there a depression diet?
Yes, totally. And that's what we're dealing with right now. All these people have been at home ordering crappy food because they've been able to work from home and they just do whatever. They go out to these fast food restaurants who swear that their food is healthy and clean. And then we go back to the meat. Our meat's better. It's not meat, so eat it. And your gut doesn't know what it is. So it starts creating just horrible things. And so your brain doesn't know what that is. And so usually anybody that's going through depression and anxiety, if they clean up their gut, they'll be okay. But it's just getting them to understand and clean up their gut and to get a little bit out of depression to where they feel like doing something. Because once you're so far in, it's like, well, I'm just going to go home and eat a bag of chips and drink a Dr. Pepper because it makes me feel good. And yeah, it does because you're doing drugs every night. So if you go home and you do those things and your body feels good for a short amount of time, then you wake up sick and then you wake up swollen and then you wake up hurting. So then you go back into the depression cycle. So inflammation in the gut and in the brain are the main two problems with all dis-ease in the body.
So what, just for a fairly simple level, what causes the inflammation? How does it manifest? What is actually getting inflated with inflammation, or what is getting inflamed, I guess, what is inflammation? What is it actually doing?
Well, I mean, it just inflamed. Like if you were to swell, so your colon swells and then it can't function. So any kind of inflammation. Yeah, like so inflammation in the joint, we know what that means. Inflammation in our body is swelling, is pressure, is more fluid, is tightness. So yeah, people can Google inflammation. But basically just things that make your body not function normally.
Huh.
And that's what we went through with COVID. It was a cytokine storm. So basically our entire body was in inflammation. So anybody who's had the vaccine, you are full of inflammation. Eventually, your organs will start failing if you don't do something about it. And then if you got COVID, you also went through a time of inflammation. That's why some people had different symptoms. Some people had joint pain in their knees or joint pain in their back, or their head just felt like it was going to explode and they were being stabbed with a knife. These are all symptoms that people told me. And I'm like, well, you've got inflammation in your head. You've got inflammation in your knees. So it attacked the inflammation is where these COVID, like, because it was with me, I had it in my knees and in my low back. It felt like somebody had taken a bat and just beat me to death. And it was, well, I'm a massage therapist. So, of course, my knees and my low back, I use them all the time. But that's why people's stories were all different.
Hit me in the voice. Yeah. If you go back to my recordings. You know, and it's fascinating. Yeah. You're exactly right. The dis-ease takes away the thing that you need most. You know, remember when my vision, declined, right when I wanted to be an Air Force pilot. That was, why? You know, why when I start doing radio, late December, early January, 2019, January 2020, did I have about 3 weeks where I had the worst cough in the world? And I felt sluggish. I didn't have a fever. There's not much I couldn't do. I just didn't have the energy to do anything. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't lay down because I would start coughing. And I coughed. This is when I had guest hosts on the show. And I couldn't do the show. It was that bad. I was only there 2 hours then. But that's where it hit me. Yeah. It hit me right in the throat, right in the voice.
Yep.
Right in the cough.
That's what it was.
Fascinating. But then it went away.
Yes. Because you probably rested it. You had to.
Exactly.
You didn't. And so that's what our body is screaming. When we're in pain or we're in disease or something's bothering us, it's telling us to rest. But society has made the life like, well, I can't rest. I have to go to work today. Well, that's your fault that you picked a job that you can't take a day off when you don't feel good.
It's funny you should say that because I talked to the boss. I had a job at the time and I said, look, everybody's getting sick. And you don't have sick days. You're forcing us to work. Everybody's reinfecting everybody else. Once they recover, they get sick again because they haven't had any time off. I said, I'm taking 2 days off. so I did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking two days off. See ya.
And
I need to recover.
Yeah, and then it
was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you rested it. Yeah, and that's the thing is people aren't doing that because we're low-staffed, where you got to be here. You got to work doubles. And that's also, again, going back to my friend that's super depressed right now. She works in the ER. She's just destroyed.
Oh,
that's
not good.
You know, and all the things. And so, but you're under fluorescent lights. You're not eating right. So, again, there are things in her control. She's just not controlling them. And that's a lot of people that I see. You tell them the easy way, and they don't want to believe that it's that easy. And it's because life has been so hard all this time. And it's like, well, how can one thing, how can CBD help me with my inflammation and it be an answer, because the doctors gave me 10 pills and I'm seeing a psychiatrist and, mm-hmm. you know, all. Well, that's why. It's because if it, that's why they don't give that to you, is if they gave you CBD, you wouldn't come back to them.
You wouldn't have to see the psychiatrist. You wouldn't have to take all the drugs. You wouldn't have to be on the antidepressants, yeah.
Right.
Well, what percent of the population's on antidepressants, just out of curiosity? I think they're one of the greatest evils in the country today. Do you have any idea? Okay.
No, I'll Google it if you need to. But, yeah, and that'll be, because they'll lie to you and it won't be right. But because people take antidepressants that are their aunts or their uncles or their mothers or their fathers, because we told ourselves that, oh, just give me a Xanax or just give me this or just give me that. It's no big deal. I took one today because I had a stressful day at work. It's like, mm-hmm. you don't understand what you're doing to your brainwaves. You're telling them not to work right. And so then the next time you are in a stressful situation, say you have a car wreck, say you have like something that just happens to you that you didn't choose, you can't react in the right way. But we don't tell you that when you start taking things that suppress the way that your brain works. So, and then the next one that was very important was fear, which is your kidneys, your ears, and your bladder. So in the symptoms,
kidneys,
you know, and that's what a lot of people, kidneys. When people tell me they have a kidney infection or bladder infection or something like that, I'm like, you're scared of something, or you're fearful, or you've got, you know, somebody has always told you you weren't going to be good enough or anything like that. But look, what's been shutting down.
Got over that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting, kidneys, because I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
I said, look what was shut down with remdesivir, kidneys. We had kidney failure.
That's exactly the point
I was
going to make. Yeah, no, so yeah. Is it any accident that remdesivir shuts down kidneys and forces what should have been excreted into your lungs? I mean, that's actually what's going to your lungs, right? The stuff that should have gone out. It's a horrible thought, but, I'm speaking as one who had my chest filled with fluid, it almost killed me 3 weeks after heart surgery. The heart surgery went fine, but the blood thinners, I think, almost killed me. And I do mean that. I was suffocating. I had one lung completely collapsed and the other one about half heading for a third. It was coming. I was, you know, so, hey, you got to save yourself. So I did, you know, but, so if you have a good survival instinct, yeah. But the point is that the remdesivir shuts off your kidneys and people are already afraid. I wonder how much of COVID is spread by fear. People are so afraid of COVID, they get it. The fear has lowered their resistance. And then you combine that with remdesivir affecting their kidneys. They've already got fear affecting their kidneys. Then they get remdesivir. Mm-hmm. The chest filled with fluid. They get put on the worst possible thing, which is a ventilator. Rather than drain the fluid and cure the kidneys, they pump air in. Mm-hmm. So you got fluid coming from one end. You got air coming in from the other. Of course people are dying.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably dying of fear, ultimately.
Yeah, that's what they're dying of. Fear. Okay. False energy appearing real. They want you to believe that this is real, and it ain't. You just got to move forward. And yes, COVID is real and COVID kills people, but you're letting it sit here. Just like all these people with stomach problems. We can go to that real quickly. If you have anybody in your life that's like, oh, I think I got food poisoning. Oh, I think I got stomach issues. Oh, I felt like that's COVID. That's the new one. It's around. It's coming. Mm-hmm. So just watch your stomach. What is your stomach? What did we just talk about? You know, so sadness, depression. We need to get back to where we are having courage and we're righteous and we know that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. Like, keep going back to that. Like, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. I will beat this and do the things that need to happen. Start taking, eating right, taking some supplements, doing some things so that they don't have control over you, because there are always going to be viruses. There's always going to be things created to put us into a fear state. But that's what I always go back to, is fear and love. So if you always choose love, your body will start loving on itself and it'll take care of you so that you can take care of others. That's what we were put here for, is to love each other. It's the only thing we're here for. We were made for love. And so when we start doing something else other than love, our body starts breaking down because it's not doing what it was called to do. Even love of oneself, like, not, don't give away your entire self. You're supposed to love yourself, because if I love myself, then I'm going to live as my higher self, who is here to do so much abundantly and help others. But if I don't love on myself, I'll always be sick. I'll always be diseased. I'll always be depressed. And then people will not want to be around me. So then even if I'm super talented and can do something for the world, nobody's going to get it because I'm not a happy person to be around. So you can take it as infinity.
That is so true. Go ahead. I mean, I was just thinking of something as you're talking.
No, it's okay. It's just up to you, you know. It's up to you how people see you, and it's up to you how you show up.
Yeah, and there's a ridiculous notion going around that, that your only purpose here is to serve other people. And I remember reading Ayn Rand and in my favorite movie, The Fountainhead, you know, Gary Cooper talks about that specifically in the film. And it's a great war between the forces that want you, that make you serve others, and the forces that say that your own work is your own work, and you have to be happy with yourself, and you have to be happy with your accomplishments. You know, I learned that lesson a long time ago, otherwise I wouldn't have started Action Radio. You know, do I believe what I'm doing is right? Absolutely. Does it make me happy? Absolutely. You know, is it a challenge? Absolutely. But that's not the point. You know, this is, you know, I've decided this is my calling, and this is what makes, you know, me happiest. And I think I'm achieving the highest, greatest good that I can. But it's a personal thing. I'm not, you know, am I doing this for other people? Sure, because, you know, I want to be free and I want other people to be free. But when it comes right down to it, this is something that I love doing. This is, you know, and you have to love the work. And so you couldn't do what you did if you didn't love the work, and you have to love yourself to love the work, because the work becomes, the work is your life. Your life is the work, you know, and they go hand in hand. And if you're not doing it for the right reasons, if your only reason for existing is to serve other people, as I was brought up to believe, which is what happens in a narcissist family, is that, you know, their problems become your problems, and you're not allowed to have problems. You know, it's a terrible way to grow up, but that's how I grew up. Okay. And so, and then they try to destroy your lives to make them feel better, but they can't because they are eternal, what I would call them, eternal black holes of selfishness or something to that effect. Empty black holes of eternal selfishness. That's how I describe it. But you learn when you break, you can use that by empty black holes of eternal selfishness. Yeah. Narcissist. And so, so once you break that and people need to get over the idea that, that your only purpose is to serve other people. It's not true. You can't serve other people until you've served yourself. Until you're happy, until you're on a good course and a good path and doing the discipline and doing the exercise and eating the right diet and things like that, sacrifice for an empty sacrifice for others without a purposeful direction for yourself is never going to get you anywhere. How am I doing?
Right. It's good. But, and so I go back to like with your heart stuff. So the heart is hate, cruelty, and impatience. And you were raised in that, you know? And so, yes, you have a genetic, you know, or something like that, but it's like, it goes back to that. It's like hate, cruelty, and impatience activated your heart problem, heart palpitations, high blood pressure, chest pain, heart and small intestine. And so those emotions are negative emotions. And so had you been taught that you could have the positive emotions, which would be love, joy, happiness, you don't know, you know, who knows how long it would have taken for your heart to give out, you know, or, do, you know, not give out,
well, no,
but
I
show
had,
you that problem.
Well, that's a very interesting concept. It's something to think about. I've had a heart murmur since I was, you know, a young adult. They said it was a valve problem. A valve was misformed. Now, did that get misformed because of emotions as I grew up, or was it always misformed?
Right.
No one seems to
be able to,
we don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but as for stomach aches, I had a stomach ache every day of my life before school until I was in college, you know, because there was stress. I was living in a stressful environment.
And so then, but the main one today that I wanted to aim on is because we're supposed, we need to be really, really paying attention to the spleen, and we're not taking care of the spleen. Like we, like I think I talked about this in the last show because Dr. Artis, Brian Artis, he mentioned if you're not taking care of the spleen, you don't, you're not doing something because the spleen is about to be messed up in a lot of people, and it's from all the things that we just got injected with. So impaired digestion.
What does it do?
It, that's what it's basically. The spleen is the it's filtration of all kinds of toxins and things. So we just got filled with toxins. And we're about to just, like, the spleen is like, I don't know what to do. And so the pancreas and the spleen talk hand in hand. And so we always pay attention to the pancreas, but then we don't talk to the spleen. And so the spleen is where that we hold, negative emotion of worry, anxiety, and mistrust. And so that's what we're going through is mistrust. We have been told that everything is going to be okay. And then, no, it's not. My bad. So impaired digestion.
The people that told us everything is going to be okay are purposely doing, creating the fear that everything's not okay. So it's a really mixed message.
And
it's
it conditioned.
Everything will be
okay. Everything in its lane, next stop is a trash can.
Yes. And so if it's not working and it's not pumping and it's paralyzed, then we won't be able, like, that's where we're at. So the stomach, the spleen, and the pancreas are associated with like the elements of earth. So it goes back into Chinese medicine that we can get deep into, but the earth element is like bearing of children, founding solid relationships. It's the major organ of processing life energy and facilitating its absorption by the body and other organs. And it's located, like if you go, you know, chakras and things, it's in the solar plexus, which is right where your ribs meet below your sternum, which is your power. So you always say, I got this gut feeling, and you'll put your hand on your stomach. Like, that is where we sometimes make big decisions. They transmit, like, make you feel emotionally balanced or physically well. And so if all that is out, that's where everybody is right now. It's like we don't know what to do. It regulates blood while the pancreas regulates glycogen in the liver. So you can get into the whole, you know, medical side of the pancreas and the spleen. But where people, and you'll hear pancreas, you know, have pancreatitis. If you'll notice, a bunch of people who got the vaccine ended up with pancreatitis. And now they're, you know, that's the next diabetes, which is coming from that, which we've talked about. So if they don't get the booster, they got to get the next booster to stay alive, which is type 3 diabetes, which they're supposedly, there's already a type 3, so it would be type 4 by diabetes. But you could have chronic feelings of...
No, this is critical, because we've talked about this, and we're probably going to talk. Can you join us on the panel tomorrow? We're going to have our doctor group back again.
No, I can't remember what time it was, and I think I had clients already.
Oh, that's okay. 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. We do that for Judy, because she's on the West Coast, and we don't want to wake her up too early. Sorry, Judy. That's Judy Michael.
No, go ahead.
For anybody that doesn't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, Pianca, did you have a question? Or no?
I was going to ask you, how does sleep play a part in all this? Ooh, I hear some people bragging, say, well, I only need 4 hours of sleep, and I hate to be around all day long.
You hate to be what all day long? I'm sorry?
Well, I've heard people brag about, well, I only take 4 hours of sleep. That's all I need. And I say to myself, I hate to be around you all day.
Yes, exactly. And that's the thing, is that they've convinced themselves that they only need 4 hours because they're able to sleep 4 hours and still function, that what they feel is optimal. But if they were to have 6 hours, maybe even 2 or 3 days a week, they would realize, oh, wow, this is how it goes. Now, it goes deep into biohacking. There are people who can hack their sleep because they've done it all. They've done no blue light. There's no electronics in their room. Their room is grounded. They don't have any interference. It is this perfect temperature and all the things. And they can get their REM, like we talked about, to be 3 cycles of 90 minutes, and they get into that deep faster. And so that's the concept of 6 to 7 hours, is that they have based it off of, it takes that long for a normal person to go through 3 cycles of REM without disturbance. So some people who are biohackers and who are like, they're these people that travel all over the world and they do only get to sleep for 2 hours and then they've got to do a conference, they have figured out how to get their body into like a rest and digest immediately, whether that be with a supplement or with CBD or with herbs. They know how to turn on those parts of the brain and they can go to sleep like right then, close their eyes. And a lot of people went, oh, I close my eyes and I go to sleep immediately. And that's great. But unless you're tracking your sleep, are you getting into REM? You know, and I don't care. I don't track my sleep either. And that's one of the things that like biohackers, they say, if you don't track it, you can't hack it. But that is my next step in my journey, is to know how I'm sleeping, because I can sleep for 12 hours and that's not healthy either.
I can't,
you know, cause it's like,
you're just too much.
You know, it's like, why is my body needing this much sleep? So apparently I'm not getting into REM sometimes. And so, but again, I attribute that to all the things that I do.
Well, don't you dream when you're in REM? Okay. That's how you know you're in it. Isn't it the dreams an indication that you're in REM sleep or not?
Yes. Supposedly dreaming, like if you get into deep sleep dreaming, and then there is this thing of like dreaming too much. Like if you dream the whole time you're asleep, you're not going through the cycles. So you're supposed to go through cycles of sleep. And they're usually about 90 minutes long. Mm-hmm.
I dream when I'm awake. It's more interesting.
I like to dream till the movie is over, at least.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, let me ask you a question. And we got Lisa on the line, too. So she may want to follow up on some of this stuff here. But the whole idea of immunity. And this is something I heard before, and this is probably a topic for next week and tomorrow, our doctor conference. Everybody, of course, is invited to join in because we have the best doctors in the world, except Dr. Marvel is going to be moving or doing something tomorrow, either or whatever, so he can't make it. He's busy, tied up with all kinds of stuff. Anyway, but the question of immunity, that these boosters are self-perpetuating, that if you get a booster, it destroys your immune system. You know, instead of boosting it, it may boost a particular part of it, allegedly, but what it's really doing is narrowing off all the other options, and eventually the more shots you get, the more shots you need, so that it effectively is a self-perpetuating marketing scheme, because it actually kills your immune system with every shot. I think flu shots do that. That's why people need more and more flu shots, and the flu shots are now four times stronger than they were 20 years ago, because so many immune systems have been so compromised that without the flu shots, people that are on flu shots will probably die, and those of us that have never taken them and never will, we're going to be just fine. Even if we get flu, we're still going to be just fine. And so we're not fine, you know, whatever that day comes. But is this engineered, from what your knowledge so far, is this engineered into these snake oil jabs, that they're actually systematically destroying your immune system, so you become even more dependent? Your life is dependent on them after a certain number of shots.
Yes, period.
Okay.
Yeah, and they'll confirm that, because, I mean, that you don't even have to be a conspiracy theory person to find the studies that I don't know where they're at, because I looked at them when they were way back, but it was like they did blood work on people after they got first, the second, the third, and their white blood cell continually went down, and so the next step would be, well, they've only got 25% left of their white blood cells, so if they take another one, it's going to deplete it another however much, because we don't know. And so yes, we can't say that it'll be five shots for this person, you know, or six shots for this one, but eventually you're done. Like, you will have to have the shot.
But you won't have an immune system for anything at that point. If you're destroying your white blood cells. Go ahead,
sorry. Because then you get AIDS and you'll get HIV and then you'll have cancer. Yep. Like, this is what they want. And I have no way to prove it. It's all speculation. But they just want people to they either want you dependent on them so that you come to the doctor more. Because they're also, so many people have died, like they've lost some of their customers. So we need more sick people. And so let's get more sick people and let's figure out how we can keep more fear.
And more fear. Fear is the advertising of COVID. Let me bring Lisa Babbage in the conversation if she has a question for you before. I don't know if you have to leave right away or can stick around. No, but Lisa, you've been listening for, what'd you say, Chancey?
Yeah.
You got a few minutes?
I just didn't know who you said. No, I heard you, Lisa.
Okay. All right. So Lisa, who I met at Systematic Deception, I think a couple of weeks ago now. Lisa, do you have a question for Chancey before we get to you and all the things we're going to talk about?
Well, I just think it was very interesting that a lot of what has already been said are things that I've been thinking for some time. And it's pretty obvious that Big Pharma and, you know, traditional medicine wants to keep us in their clientele, in their pocket, so that they have a business. They are practicing medicine. They are not healing people. You know, and if you down the spiritual path, there's a lot of indications that what they are doing are harming us, in not just in an accidental way, but in a very purposeful way. You know, I survived cancer and a brain tumor, and none of it was healed through traditional Western medicine. You know, I went back to the foundation. I always call it garden healing. You know, if we think about Garden of Eden, there are herbs, there are roots, there are things that that are already placed here by God, who have given us the tools to heal ourselves, and our body is wired to do so. You know, removing the toxins, in the inflammation, as was said. And that is not what you get when you go to your traditional doctor.
No, they add to it. They add to the inflammation. They add to the side effects.
You get a pharmacological, quote-unquote, cure, which actually brings on more symptoms, never takes care of the initial pain or complaint that you went there with. They forego everything that is common sense about the body, and instead they're prescribing a business for themselves. And I don't think that doctors do this maliciously, but Big Pharma obviously does. And if you look at the changes in the last 20 years, you have to be very skeptical to not think it is not done intentionally.
Right. And that's where I think they keep a big a portion of people as they can, thinking that the next pill will work. The next pill will work. And as long as they can keep people in that cycle, they don't look to Eastern medicine or spirituality or anything like that because they don't. That's not associated with medical care. Why would I look at that? That has nothing to do. Like, okay, well, I'm going to keep taking my prescription, but then I'm going to maybe try this one supplement. And then they're scared to take the supplement so that it affects their medicine. But that's the point, is that if you're taking something natural and it says do not take this with such and such, you might want to look into that because it's probably trying to fix the issue and you're taking a pill that's not allowing it. And so, and it's like the thing with grapefruit juice, you know, what now?
Exactly. So taxing is just one part of this conversation. It is the managed, it's the pain management business.
That's
the crux of all of this.
Yeah, it is. And that, because you start out with pain, and you fit, and the pain is there, and then, like we just talked about, in the organs, they're not looking at the, or they're not telling the person where that might be coming from, and then they're addressing the pain, but then the pain medicine is causing other organs to fail, and so then you end up with, you know, say, non-alcoholic cirrhosis of the liver, and they just tell you you have it. And it's like, well, how did I get this? Nobody asks, you know? And it's like, well, we've been giving you, you know, opiates that have destroyed your liver, but you wanted it for your pain. So we helped you with the pain, didn't we? So here's another pill,
you know,
that will help your liver.
Smokers who die of emphysema or throat cancer, you know, and you want that even happen. But we've also got to look at quote unquote preventative medicine that is not holistic in nature. So, you know, something gets approved. Insurance is what I'm getting at here. Something gets approved to be tested or treated through insurance, yet you have no symptoms. Let's go ahead and test you. And if you fall in that range, quote, unquote, of normal, we're going to go ahead and prescribe you something that you had no ailments for.
Yes, exactly. And so now you know those
natural medicines, human beings used to walk around barefooted. They used to eat foods conducive to their environment. They used to brush up against the tree. So all those, and also drink and bathe in the river. All those processes were medicating them and providing them with the proper doses that the human body deserved. But now, like you say, it's just totally out of whack. They give you a pill of medicine today. A traditional medicine is highly concentrated, whereas nature gave you just little bits and pieces of what you needed at the time you needed.
Yeah,
the word is, I remember when I was in my early 20s, I went with a pain. It turned out I was precancerous, and, you know, they told me I was going to be on painkillers for the rest of my life. And I got up out of there, and, you know, it's a lot of times it's difficult for people, perhaps especially women, perhaps people who come from a lower socioeconomic standing, to fight against the guy in the white coat with the degree on the wall. But I said at 23, there's no way I'm going to be on painkiller for the rest of my life. And I got up and had the courage to walk out and get a second opinion. Why people are emboldened to do that is it's very tragic. It's very tragic. That's why we see the death rate. We see people dropping dead, not just because of the jab, but we see it just from various conditions that are totally treatable.
Yes,
and yet
that's it.
Note here.
And that's where, like, what I was, as in, so that I can let y'all, I'm going to let y'all do y'all shut and however y'all go, but back to what Bianchi says is, like, we have to be back in the earth. Like, the spleen, that was what the last thing with the spleen, is it is the earth element. We need to be outside. We need to be grounding ourselves. We need to be intaking herbs from the earth that grow here. And it, then it goes back to all the elements. We need to get water. We need to get fire. We need wood. We need to be back in nature. And that's what they want. Quarantine, inside. So once, if we just reverse it and we do one thing a day and we tell ourselves that we are open and we trust people and we're fair and, like, that we get back into the earth and we do things for our bodies, our organs will start loving on us again. But we have to love on them. We have to tell them that it's okay and that maybe we're sorry and that we did some things we shouldn't have. So take care of the temple. It's the only one you get.
Absolutely.
This is my favorite kind of show. I just sit back and listen. I love when everybody talks to everybody else. This is why I have overlaps. You know, we don't do segments here. We don't. I don't break people up and people that can call early in the show, like Pianki, who's my co-host now. I'm going to give you a new title, Pianki. You're going to be co-host. Just hang out and we get these incredible conversations. And this is why I love the crossover, especially with the different expertise. Well, Lisa, you're going to have to call back when Chansey's on again. And feel free, just drop in anytime. You guys are great. Chansey, let's get your contact information just in case you have to go anytime soon. And I want to get on to Lisa questions.
And yes, this is some great help for these people. So that's what I was saying is just get with me. And, like, if you want to, I'll take you to coffee and or if it's out of state or out of country, I'll do a Zoom video with you and just try to get you stuff in your area that you can find to just start your journey one thing at a time. And once you feel empowered, it is easier to say no to that white coat. But if you're not, then you believe the white coat. And so you haven't done anything wrong or bad. It's just you need somebody to guide you. And I am a wellness guide. I am a healing facilitator. I'm not doing the work. I'm helping your body do it. It is capable of doing everything that it needs. But you just have to have sometimes somebody to encourage it along the way with maybe something that is from the earth that you can't find somewhere else. So my website is Chansey Terry, ChanceyTerry.com, and everything's on there. And if you don't find something that's on there, just find the show, and I'll be on here on Wednesday.
And ask here. So call in here, 215-383-3832. Yeah. That's on your broadcast stage, folks.
Thank you, Lisa. I hope y'all have a beautiful, amazing day. And, I love all of you. Take care.
You too, be careful.
Thank you. I will. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Or as I say, take chances. I think risk is part of the excitement here. All right, let's get to our guest of the day, Lisa Babbage. So what happened, I went to this amazing film. In fact, we actually had an incredible new guest who's now absolutely part of our family here, Mama B. Thomas. And there was this film, Systematic Deception, which talks about black conservatives and the lies from the Democrat Party. And I'm watching this film, and I'm watching all the people in it, and I'm leaving the place, and I see one of the folks in it, and it's like, you were in the film. This is Lisa, right? This is how we met. And here I am, sort of like the goofy kid saying, oh, I'm meeting a movie star. This is great. You know, do I ask for autograph? How do I introduce myself, as the Action Radio dude? That's how we met. And Lisa's been on a few times. She's fascinating. She's just a wonderful guest and has all kinds of incredible things to talk about. And so I just wanted to have her back for an hour. I'm sure this is not going to be our last hour, but you're always welcome on the show. Call in anytime. You don't need an invitation. Just dial the number, and here we are. So Lisa, how are you?
I am fabulous, and I'm so excited just to have like a block of time to chat with you and love the opportunity to call in, so I really appreciate that. And I'm glad you stopped me that day.
Well, I said, I recognized you, and I thought, you were in the film. Like I say, it was a fan thing because you were great in the film, and the people in it were just amazing. And we might as well start there. Because this is fascinating to me, and I've talked about this before with Pianki, that the rise of black conservatives is one of those critical things for all of our freedom. Because when this, Democrat privileged group, they think, that they're a part of the Democrat constituency that they can count on for everything and can do anything to, once black conservatives start rising up, it threatens everything the Democrats stand for. And so this is a threat to them. But it's fascinating. But it really, impacts everybody's freedom. I don't think people realize how much freedom black conservatives are bringing to the entire country by defying the Democrats, by saying that I'm not going to be a victim, that this propaganda, this plantation mentality has got to stop. And seeing this in the film is really great. So anyway, that's why you're here. Feel free to elaborate.
Well, you know what? It goes back to me, the foundation of our country. If we think about this whole idea, which I say a lot, is that, black people built this nation through the process of slavery. But it was really the people who left the plantation that truly freed America to pursue what its founding documents said that it was there for. And it really was the culmination. We're coming up on Juneteenth pretty soon, which is that culmination of freedom that the American Constitution provided. So it was the physical building through the economy, but then it was the metaphysical building through that pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. And that's what I see black conservatives doing today. I think they're retaking back the party of Lincoln, and they're actually showing America, holding up that mirror to show America who she really is. And, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, this goes hand in hand with the manipulation. And it's not just Democrats, unfortunately. It's the elite class that, you know, there are plenty of Black conservatives who have walked away, quote unquote, or made presence known, but they've been chased off by quote unquote conservatives. You know, we might call them by something else. And,
oh, go ahead.
You know,
name it. This is the ultimate free speech zone. So feel free to speak freely here. You know, everything's
well, you know,
fair game.
I like the term rhino. I think that gives rhinos a bad name, to be honest with you.
I don't call them rhinos anymore. I call them transgender Democrats.
Well, and I've heard that, and that's hilarious. But they're just posers. You know, I'm from the 80s, and they're posers. And they're traitors. And honestly, they're the Benedict Arnold of our country and our party, so to speak. But these folks, these elites on both sides of the aisle, do not want Blacks to come out in mass because it's the same thing as leaving the plantation back in the days of slavery. And it will forever change our country for the better. And that's what they don't want to happen. They're afraid of losing that power. They're afraid of losing their privilege. And this is not a white or Black thing. This is not a Republican or Democrat thing. This is the elite posers who are, in fact, being traitors to our country.
Well, they use the white or Black thing, though. This is the problem, is that the elites use, you know, anything to divide people so that people are fighting each other, not fighting them. And so part of the purpose of this show is to get together on citizen legislation. I don't write Black legislation or white legislation or Asian legislation. When I write legislation, it's for everybody. In fact, that's an absolute requirement of the show. Anybody that comes to the show proposing a bill, it better damn well apply to everybody or ain't going anywhere. We don't do special privileges here, nor do we punish either through legislation. So, you know, and I've talked about this with Pianki too a bunch of times. There's like a new segregation. There's a segregation of punishment, which is, you know, Jim Crow and the old laws of segregation. There's almost a new segregation of privilege, you know, extra points on the SAT test, more, you know, minority scholarships, things like that. You know, and it's a way to divide. It's every much a divide as it was. The punishment segregation is every much the divide that the privilege segregation is becoming. It's really crap. It's still segregation.
It is segregation, but it's an extremely lazy way that happens to be working. Because if you think about the two of us, the easiest differences you can see from a mile away is gender and color. It tells you nothing about who you are nor nothing about who I am. And, you know, when we did Systematic Deception, I don't know if you know, but I'm the associate producer, and I'm also the author of Con.
Tell us the story.
I wrote a book in 2020 when I was running for office in Georgia, and it was called The Black History Bible. It was at the behest of a Black pastor, if you can imagine that. He wanted me to really expose what has happened to, quote unquote, our people in this whole grand scheme of things and how we've been the pawns, the political pawns, upon which this elite class is playing. So I wrote the book. When I, my mother was reading it one day, and I had no idea what she was reading, but she kept making these little comments as she was reading. And finally I said, "What in the world are you reading?" And she said, "I'm reading your book, and this needs to be made into a movie." So that point, she sent media kits to documentary makers across the country. One landed in the hands of Frank Panico, who is an amateur part-time documentary maker out of Florida. We sent him the book. He read it within 2 days and said, "This is going to be my next project." And from there, I lined speakers, and that's how I found Mama B. Now, I knew Mama B, but we were at a convention in Florida. So we did one day of shooting in Georgia, and then we were at a convention in Florida. I invited Frank over. He brought his camera. We got a room. Every person that I knew, every Black conservative that walked past me over the course of that two-day convention, I threw them. And I remember Mama B wanted to hang, you know, in the green room with DeSantis and all the glorious folks. And I said, "Nope, your interview is scheduled." And literally pushed her down the hallway, threw her in a room.
I can see this, too. I can visualize this whole thing.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Of course you can see it the whole way. But, you know, we got in footage, honestly, to put out a new installment of this documentary every year for Black History Month for the next 20 years. Because you got folks like Ken. You've got Alveda King in it. You've got C.L. Bryant. You've got Keisha King. You've got street pastors, you've got educators, you've got candidates. It's a cross-section of Black conservatives who are all telling the same truth that I put in my book, The Black History Bible, which, incidentally, is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Okay, give a spelling of your name. Let's have people find it. Let's make it official.
Yeah. So go to Lisa Noel Babbage on Amazon. You will be able to see all of my books. I have written 25 books. Several of them are political in nature. Because I'm a classroom educator, I've definitely got some things there that are very helpful for parents and grandparents. But then also, I have a series of religious books that are very important and timely because I tie it into what's happening right now. So for those of you of faith, just type in my name, Babbage, on Amazon, and you will see a litany of books come up. But the Black History Bible is the one we're talking about right now.
You know, I'm thinking of, too, first of all, I'm hoping to encourage you to get a Yeti Blue microphone and a headset so I can send you direct connections, because your phone, we're losing an occasional word here, and it'd be nice to have you be able to broadcast. Pianki, too, you need the same thing. I want to get you a headset, too, because you're on the show so much. I can get you a direct connect, and it would be a lot better connection because you go directly into the Internet. But what I'm thinking is, if you, Lisa, would like to bring individually the people that were on the movie, if they're interested in coming on the show here, and you can talk to them, and I'll talk to them too, and I'm sure Pianki will join us, another caller will join us, Mama B, I'm sure, will join us too. But let's bring some of these folks on. Let's give them the time to express themselves. And so I'm just going to put it to you, think about it, see how you want to do it. You know, I can make an hour a week for the next, you know, 3 months until we get through, you know, the people that are on the film. And actually, some have been on. Jerome Bell, for example, I met. Well, I haven't met him personally, but we've been talking for, I don't know, 8-9 months maybe at this point, because he knows Jonathan Mosley. Jonathan's our legal reporter. And so then I got to know Jerome, and Jerome is one of the only two people, actually two people, Jerome Bell and Calvin Windisch. Calvin is a retired colonel from the Army. Jerome Bell is a retired Navy chief, and they both have over 20 years of service. And in fact, we're actually trying to put together a panel of Black conservative men veterans. So we're going to do that one day too. It's just,
oh,
this show never. Oh, okay. Yeah, the show never stops growing. Everybody brings someone to the party here, which is fascinating. But I'm just thinking it would be amazing to get those folks together to talk about this because it is such a critical subject, and it's developing so fast. You know, so you just imagine that, especially the white liberal Democrats. What are they saying? You know, they're sitting back going, oh, no, we can't count on the black vote anymore because they're all of a sudden being independent. And I never like grouping people anyway because people think for themselves. But that's right. Got to be causing some interesting discussions in the Democrat Party.
Absolutely. And I've just recently written a paper on modeled ethnicity and how it is actually diminishing voters. So modeled ethnicity basically is the voter rolls that the two major political parties use. And from your last name, your geographic location, perhaps some of your buying trends, your buying history, I should say, they determine whether or not you're rated on between a weak Democrat to a hard Democrat to an independent to a weak or hard Republican. So they will rate you not necessarily based on your registration, not based on your voting history, but based on who they think you are. So it's a modeled ethnicity. For example, I've been a Republican since I was 17, actively working in the party. I've run for Congress now twice. I have held seats in our state party, our district party, and our county party, yet on these voter rolls, I am listed as a volatile Democrat.
A volatile, not just a Democrat, but a volatile Democrat. This is fascinating.
Yeah,
and Pianki, if you want to join in the conversation, Pianki, just leap right in. We're between Lisa and I, we can
talk
about
it. Yeah, we'll tell
it real fast. Okay. Well, I want to, so how did that go?
What happens from that,
go ahead.
And what I'm posturing from that is that now certain candidates are not going to reach out to me because they might think I'm a lost cause or that I've already determined how I'm going to vote. So you can imagine the numerous number of Black conservatives who have only voted one way because no one else has knocked on their doors. Well, it could be because of this modeled ethnicity, you know, and unfortunately, candidates and campaigns rely on the data from the two major parties in order to run their campaigns. So you've got a lot of, you know, even in my household, for example, certain people got mailers of one persuasion. Other people got mailers of a different persuasion, and yet we all vote the same way. Historically.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. You said purchasing power. You said, how do they know what we're purchasing? How is that evidence getting to the parties?
Well, I mean, part of that could come from Facebook algorithms, Amazon algorithms. You know, all of that is tied in. Every major marketer is tracking our purchasing history in order to provide us with ads. So when you advertise on Facebook and they're using their algorithms, if a candidate chooses to do that, well, Facebook is going to pull who they think you are based on the links that you've clicked on in the past.
Okay. You know, I should tell you about the zebra-striped underwear experiment. We were talking on the show one day about this, about algorithms, about marketing, about the fact that everything you look up, you know, I get a lot of guitar ads because I look up guitar stuff all the time because I'm a guitar player. Mm-hmm. So I thought to myself one day, I said, well, let's have some fun. I said, I'm going to look up something that there's nothing I would ever want to own. And the first thing that came to mind was zebra-striped underwear. So I said, okay, let's look up we were on the show. We were live at this time. I think it was about 20 minutes. You know, I had Facebook up at the same time. I kept checking it. It took about 20 minutes to get a Facebook ad for zebra-striped underwear. Crack me up. I reported on the show. It was hysterical. So if you want to have some fun with this, pick a product that you're never, never, never going to want to own, or make up a product just for the fun, just to screw around with them and see how long it takes for it to show up on your screen. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
which
you know,
is, go ahead.
What she's talking, what this person is talking about is actually true is when it comes down to Facebook and their algorithm. And you can see it when they give you a suggestion of who you may want to consider friending. And if you go down through the list and the pictures, you will spot people that you either came in contact with at certain venues, book suggestions, or conversation or posting. And it's usually centered around where you would find or what blacks would like. And she's absolutely right.
No, it's fascinating. I mean, the friend requests the suggested people are black conservatives and women gun owners. That's who's coming to the show right now. And so it's fascinating as I get more guests that those are the suggestions. It's really pretty amazing. How psychological this is. Well, that's why I wrote that bill. Lisa, I don't know if you had a chance to read this or not, but I'm hoping to get your support on this. The two big bills are the vaccine product liability and my Section 230 rewrite, which makes the liability immunity for big tech conditional on two things. One, that they don't touch anything you do on social media or your account. And two, that they don't do anything to arrange the search engine results on a search. It's just the raw number of hits. That's the only way they can arrange it. And if they do anything different than those, if they touch your account, touch what you post, or touch the results of a search, then that voids their liability immunity and they can be sued. And so that, I think, would go a long way to fixing this problem.
Yeah,
Lisa?
It's got to be rewritten immediately. Section 230 has got to be rewritten immediately.
Oh, I did.
That's one of the things.
It's been rewritten.
Yeah.
But getting it out there is the problem. It's been rewritten. Yeah. I don't think people realize how simple the solution is, and this is something we can talk about too, that legislation, you look at the real problems in law. You know, whether it's product liability for vaccine makers, you know, you just, where it says vaccine makers shall not be liable, you just take out the word not. It's not that hard to fix this. Fix the big tech censorship in basically four or five lines of changes
it's
in law. It's not
editing.
The whole of
it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think we call that editing.
Yeah, but it's not that tough. We didn't need any trust. We didn't need a whole new bureaucracy. We didn't need a bunch of regulation. I just changed four lines in law.
Exactly. We don't need 2,000 pages of legalese to tell us what is common sense right for America. And honestly, the world, Section 230 is going to impact the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, check out the bill. We've got. Yes. If I haven't sent it to you already, I will. We need to do that. So we've got about half an hour left. Let's get to the topics you want to talk about. I want to get onto the whole idea of school safety and maybe the economy if we have a chance to do it. But where do you want to go? Did you have a specific, your hot topic for today?
You know, I mean, you could say that school safety is a hot topic for this entire week, you know, because we're dealing with a tragedy that has just taken place. And, you know, I don't know if your listeners have had a chance to look at the breakdown of what happened in that 74 minutes leading up to the death of 19 children and two teachers, but it is an avoidable tragedy. And we're not talking about strengthening any gun laws here. We're just talking about putting common sense things in place, like you said, for Section 230, just removing the word not. You know, there are many schools now who
we're getting our bills a little confused. No, it was Section 230. I made the liability conditional with the vaccine liability. And that's okay. You haven't read the bills, I understand. So, yeah. Go ahead.
Right. And so these are things that could have been done in this particular instance to make sure that kids were safe. And the fact that the left will automatically go to, I think you were talking about this do something generation.
Yeah, we did.
You know, and that's kind of where we keep going, you know. So we want to do something about children being killed in schools. But if you notice, people are not shooting up, airport terminals. People are going to the most vulnerable. I did a tweet recently to say, you know, why are the elderly and children the ones being targeted by these mentally ill folks who get their hands on a weapon? Well, it's pretty obvious as to why. They are cowards. They're going with the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we can't just put simple things in place to make sure that kids are safe without coming after our Second Amendment rights is just deplorable.
We did the show on that yesterday. Yeah, but you're an educator and you're a teacher. You've been in the classroom. I specifically want your recommendations for what you would do for this.
Well, you know, I can't even tell you how many active shooter drills I've had to participate in. And the unfortunate thing is that many schools are, you know, as old as I am. So they're structurally not sound. We spend a lot of money on craft and pencils when the actual facilities are not up to par. What we need, first of all, is a barrier, and I don't know the technical term for it, but when you come into a school building, there should be an alcove that is separated by locked doors before gaining access to the main building. And so that's a place to screen, you know, anyone who's coming on property. Second of all, obviously, doors can't be propped open. We have to secure the campus. And yes, courtesy officers are great. But typically, for example, in Georgia, one courtesy officer serves three different schools. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that every one of those three schools is left unprotected from officer presence for numerous hours throughout the day. So I think we need to beef up, you know, because there's nothing like having that little sticker on your front door that says, I'm armed. That's all it takes to deter someone from trying to break in your house, you know, 9 times out of 10 statistics show. So we need to have that alcohol in every school. We need to have courtesy officers that are able to actually patrol a school as opposed to patrol a school for a third of the day. We don't need to arm teachers. You know, I'm a gun owner, but I am busy teaching. I am not there to be the security guard. Someone else has to be the security guard. But, you know, from keeping outside intruders coming in, there is a very simple way to protect a campus. It's the same thing you would do in your home. It's the same thing corporations do. You have cameras. You have a security officer. You have a locking alcove so that when people come on property, you can, you know, accurately screen them. And you don't keep windows and doors open. But second of all, you do not have a police force sitting outside a school for an hour when an active shooter is there. If it hadn't have been for that off-duty Border Patrol person, there could have been many more people who were killed in Uvalde. And I weep for those families, but as a classroom teacher, there's so many simple things that we could put in place. And the fact that school district put out Facebook posts that were somewhat deceiving is very disturbing. So you kind of have to ask yourself, where did all this come from? You know, and the big elephant in the room is, of course, we need mental health services. This kid obviously showed signs of mental health struggles, issues, long before he walked onto that campus. So that's my kind of rant for that.
Well, when you say mental health services, at what point are you talking about restraining a person? Are you talking about putting them in for observation? We have something called the Baker Act here where you can be mandatorily put in if you show evidence that, you know, you're not able to take care of yourself, you're going to hurt yourself, you're going to hurt others, you know, and so they have that procedure in Florida. But at what point do mental health issues become a mental health crisis? And we say, wait a minute, without going into prior restraint and, like we say, restricting the rights of honest, law-abiding people. You know, for me, it's when they make a statement on Facebook or when they make some obvious thing or they talk to people and say, hey, I want to do, you know, X horrible thing. I would take those people seriously. And at that point, you've given the probable cause. You've given the evidence that you need to be looked at, like right now, you know. Yeah, go ahead.
I would take those people seriously as well, but I tell you what, my daughter works in this field on the West Coast, and there are many people who are taken into state custody for 3 days. They're monitored, and they're released with no follow-up. You know, almost 20, 30 years ago, we shut down the bulk of our mental hospitals. But I'm one of those people, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And you could ask any teacher, any classroom teacher today, and she can let you know are susceptible to having some sort of outburst later in life. There's a screening process that can take place in K-12 education that would help those kids who need help, honestly.
Hmm.
You know, this is one.
No, that makes sense.
Most of the shooters are young people. You know, they could have been identified in their K-12 setting long before this happened. So, yes, you know, there's plenty of people out there with mental illness who need help, but a lot of the ones who are committing these heinous crimes have just gotten out of high school or are still high schoolers. And so I think screening in the school is a way to help.
Pinocchi?
Yeah, I hear what you say. Now, I myself, of course, in Texas, you got 107 school districts that allow teachers to carry weapons. And I think that if a teacher is qualified to carry a weapon through a process that may suit the school district or a process that suits the society, they should be allowed to carry weapons. One thing that someone that's shooting at you don't want to see is you shooting back at them. And as we've seen in Florida, no, in Virginia, where you had a shooter that got out of his car and was going to shoot at a crowd at a function at their home in the backyard, well, it just so happened to be a bystander there close to him. And when she seen this person pull out that rifle, yeah, well, it's level down the shoot. She shot him and killed him. Well, that was just a simple bystander. And I think that's something that could be considered. And you know, another thing, something like a fire door that students themselves can roll across the traditional door that enters into a classroom is something that can be in the design architecture or further maintenance that can be applied in present-day classrooms. It's a lot of things that can be done.
Well, that gets back to the structure of the buildings just being outdated. I mean, to be honest with you, that's a simple fix. And I mean, in Georgia, we've got teachers who are gun owners. I just personally feel like I would want to focus on why I'm there, which is educating kids. And we can use all of this peripheral interventions to prohibit the acts from taking place rather than me having to blow somebody away, which I'm totally comfortable with doing if I was face-to-face to protecting my kids or taking out a mentally ill active shooter. But the point of the matter is I'm there to teach. I don't want that additional, you know, teachers literally, they are the counselors, they are the mothers, they are the nurses, they are the educators, they are the coaches. Are we going to add on bodyguard? You know, that's where this job becomes more.
Yeah.
I mean, and even if they want to. Parents want their kids. You know, you have to. One of the things that we always think about as teachers is we don't get to choose our students. You know, I had a lot of kids in my class that thought just like me. But for those who were raised in different households, there were a lot of uncomfortable conversations in our classroom. And thankfully, we were able to peaceably debate. But I shouldn't, as a teacher, just because I'm a gun owner, try to force that mentality on someone who is raised completely different and put them in a situation that really impedes on their rights for the sake of safety. There's lots of ways we can keep kids safe without arming teachers.
Hmm. Yes,
well, I
think it'd be a choice. Let me change to, you said something really interesting a bit ago, and it was only one word. You said the teachers, you said she, and you talked about mothers, nurses, and things like that. Is there a deficit of men? Teachers, male role models in schools. Is this one of the problems that these young, you know, especially if they don't have fathers at home, they're going from an environment where there's a mother at home and they're going to an environment where there's women teachers. Is there an alienation? Is there a lack of role models? Is there something in the mental health? I mean, I'm not excusing what these people do, but I'm saying, is there a component of this, that there's a lack of male interaction, especially with young, you know, men in school?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so, you know, I say she just by way of habit because I'm an elementary school teacher, and 99% of all elementary school teachers are female. Now, when you
I picked up on
up
it. that's where I asked. Yeah.
Yeah. You get into the upper middle and high school. Yeah. You're going to see a lot more men, but still there is an absence of testosterone and male presence in K-12. And, yes, mm-hmm. it impacts all of these kids who don't have fathers at home. They don't have uncles. They don't have a balanced exposure to what it means to become an adult. And, you know, I think mm-hmm. we saw that in the show. You know, mm-hmm. I think we could see evidence that, you know, that person had not been exposed to, you know, both genders in a balanced way that would help groom them into adulthood. And, you know, this is inner city, but this is also in the suburbs. This is mm-hmm. everywhere you go in America.
Yeah. How about the psychotropic drugs, the antidepressants? I remember the Columbine in particular. They were heavily medicated with antidepressants. And I've done shows on this, you know, from previous years, you know, going back 4 or 5 years at WBY, my previous radio station, that these play a huge part, especially if you're drugging mostly young boys with Ritalin and ADHD drugs. And I'm about as ADHD as it gets use it to my advantage, you know, but I would have been drugged if I was in school today. You know, as a young boy with my lack of attention and my outbursts and my ridiculous questions, now I turn into a lifestyle. But at the time, I was not one of the favorite students, you know, just for being me. So is that a component as well?
Oh, absolutely. And one theory I have is that we really need to match students with the teacher. You know, there's certain teachers you have, I've had, where we're expected to sit there and, you know, do nothing, honestly. And, you know, it's a very stagnant classroom. Well, that doesn't work with every kid. So you're setting that kid up for failure, where there's other teachers, if they had, you know, found a way to be lucky enough to be in their classroom, it would have been no big deal. You know, that's why I, for the last 18 years, have gotten those kids, because I can deal with it. I don't expect the children just to sit still all day and, you know, listen to me regurgitate truth.
Well, if you I was in your class, can you imagine me as young me in your class?
But, you know, kids have to move.
Yeah.
We have, you know, there's more than one kind of intelligence, and public school does not lend itself to that. You know, you can be very physical. I had one kid that, you know, whenever he was uncontrollable, you know, he did push-ups. He took a lap. He came back in. He did great. You know, that child just needed to move, and that child shouldn't be punished for the way they're wired. You know, we think that makes a kid bad. No, that just makes a kid kinesthetic. And we don't take the time to actually look at the student-teacher relationship when we're loading classes. And we're not looking at education in a way that is more holistic, the way people actually learn.
I should say that. I wrote an article, and it's long. Unfortunately, it's not as readily available as it used to be, because I think you'd find it really interesting. We should talk about it sometime. But that was the whole point, is that not only do I want to move to a choice system of education, a full voucher system, but a system where actually parents and kids design a lot of their own curriculum, and those vouchers can be used for everything from ballet to sports to, you know, to arts to all kinds of different things in on top of, you know, classes in the more traditional, you know, read and write and arithmetic kind of stuff. And that if a kid is going to college, you know, the kid and the parents can, you know, do a more academic program throughout school. But if the kid wants to be an auto mechanic or wants to be an actor or whatever they want to do, or they want to be, you know, some kind of different discipline than the traditional stuff, then you could design a condition around that. And that would still be given academic credit. So maybe there's...
I mean, they need academic credit. I mean, people do get life experience credit as adults, so why shouldn't kids be given the same freedom through school choice? But for K-8, that's when young people are still just figuring it all out. And the fact that we're so rigid and we've made vocational school a dirty word, we've made kids who, you know, show that they are not going to be college ready by the time they're 18, we've made them – we're labeling them as if they have learning disabilities, as opposed to truly looking at the individual nature in which humanity was created. You know, we look at it when it comes to gender. You can have, 99 genders, but you can't have 6 different learning styles that are documented and proved.
That's fascinating. What if the problem is the government schools themselves? I've never understood this idea that education comes from government. Government governs, government controls, government wants cooperation, compliancy, government wants all kinds of things that seem to me to be the opposite of education, of academic freedom, of exploring topics that are outside the norm, of you know, people learning different things, which is good. I don't like standardized education. So would we be better off with a fully privatized, fully vouchered system as opposed to and get government completely out of education?
It's not a what if. it's what is, and government schools is the problem. Now, I would say that it would be nice to have this net of government schools for about 5% of the population whose parents can't get it together. We're talking about orphans. We're talking about kids whose parents are incarcerated or addicted. This is what the government school should be. It should be more like a social service, not the mainstream. We need community school. I'm working on community school models here in Georgia. We need privatization of schools so that kids can actually pursue whatever their dream is for their adult life. And we don't have that option now. I do believe that the Department of Education should be completely dismantled, except for the point of oversight when it comes to standardized tests. We want our nation to be competitive with other nations. Therefore, we need standardized tests at the high school level. And we need a data bank to report how various states are doing. But it should come right back down to the community. And any tax dollars that go towards education should follow the child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, government schools is nothing but government indoctrination. I'm part of a group called No Left Turn in Education. It's a nationwide organization, nonprofit, that was started back as soon as COVID hit, so less than 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do is fight this indoctrination, because now parents have had a chance to see what I've been looking at for the last 18 years. And now they're riled up. Nobody would have expected that education would be one of the number one issues that Americans are talking about across their kitchen table. But we see what has happened in our schools. Now parents are willing to voice their concerns. And so woke culture is pushing, you know, the narrative even harder to try to hold on to the last, you know, power that they have before parents take over every school board in America.
Sounds really encouraging to me. Pianki, sounds like you had a question.
Yeah, it sounds like me talking. I'm 100%.
You're on the right show, Lisa.
Yeah, school choice and for the money to follow the child. That way a parent can put this child in an environment that goes along with the family, the parent and family's long-term educational goal for that child. And right now it's not happening. And see, what you have, just because a family is poor, that don't mean that they're not functional. And what I mean by functional, they prepare that child for the first day of school. But many parents are not. So what happens when you mix the two? Well, the one that has been well prepared doesn't get the attention that they need, and also they're being denied, and it's a hold-me-back situation with them. No, that's the wrongest thing that you could do. You cannot put an on-off switch on a child, just like you don't have an on-off switch on the United States Constitution.
Yeah.
You know, this is fascinating. I love your model for schools, that those parents that really aren't in a position to be able to take care of and educate the kids and direct their education, that's what the government schools should be for. Are you actively working on legislation for this? Do you have a model program? Is this from a book? What I'm basically saying is, can I help? You know, do you want to work on this particular legislation, or is that already being done?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely I'd love to help, because we're working on it with No Left Turn. We're working on it with an organization called Beacon Light, who has been test piloting. We have a new group of kids that are coming in this fall. We have about 50 families that we're going to be doing this on. I took 6 years out of my career to write curriculum, and I'm partnering with these organizations so we can see it come to light. But I will tell you where this all started, and I think you will find it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a young girl and moved to Georgia with my mother after my parents' divorce, we lived in a homeless shelter. And this is where the idea for a community school, because we had to go to whatever school was near the homeless shelter we were living in. You know, back then, and even now, you know, kids can stay in their home school, but we had no home school. So we were either being educated in group homes, my brother and I, or being educated at the local school wherever the shelter was, which was typically the worst neighborhood around. Mm-hmm. There were no school supplies. There were no tutoring. There were no, in some cases, electricity so that you could do your homework with, you know, light and a table and whatever it is you need. All of that was missing. And yet my brother and I were scoring at some of the highest levels on standardized tests as elementary school students. So even though we were facing extreme trauma, we fell through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have PhD now, but I graduated high school with a 1.6 GPA and had to go to night school in order to finish on time.
Wow.
That's not the norm. The norm is that these kids are being thrown away from society in mass, and we're wondering why we're in the situation that we're in with, you know, voters who are illiterate, with, you know, people who are only operating under emotion, with this, you know, biological division that has come in. I shouldn't even say biological. It's a mental division that's in our nation, where we're at each other's throat and we're on the crux of what could be, you know, Civil War type explosions.
Mm-hmm.
With what's going on in various cities, especially liberal Democrat run cities.
Yeah, apparently.
You know,
go ahead, Piaggy.
What goes on, and when you talk about urban schools and these inner city schools, the way these black children are treated is tantamount to child abuse to the highest degree. It is just ridiculous. Then they come up with all these excuses talking about the day. Like I told Greg, when you hear someone talk about the day, ask them the email address. Ask them their phone number and their house address. And it's nothing more than a continuation of excuse. The reason why is because they make money off these black kids. There's no responsibility. There's no accountability. The only thing that's considered is the ADA, the average daily attendance money that comes into a school building when that child is counted in that chair by 11 o'clock in the morning. And that's it. And you got these perpetrators of evil like the NEA and the American Federation of Teachers. It's just a mess. And black folks need to get out of this realm of blaming everybody else. You control this school district. It's a black community. In the state of Missouri, the statutes say that the curriculum, textbook, and teacher instruction could be whatever the district wants it to be, and that the State Board of Education and the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education cannot mandate to that district. So who do the fault belong to?
You know, in Georgia, we call it FTE, not ADA, but it's the same thing. And, you know, you're absolutely right, because each one of these kids, every label they get, that's more money coming to that school. Yet teachers, administrators, no one that's actually in the schoolhouse is given that kind of training to deal with the post-traumatic stress many of these kids bring to the classroom every day. Instead, we're giving them donuts for their bad behavior, you know, and calling it restorative practices. Instead, we are labeling these children that they will never be able to come out of where they were born in. You know, there's so many things that we do wrong in the name of justice or empathy or care, and we are really just flushing down these kids' future. We're flushing it down the toilet, and it is happening to our communities more than any other.
Absolutely. And then you get to the point where it's become a national security issue, because now you have raised or produced a population that is not astute in so many different areas. It's in the black community, you have all this emphasis on basketball and football. You pass by these fields at 8:30 at night, and they got kids out there practicing football drills. You got them in the basketball court shooting 100 free throws. Well, why come they not at home doing 100 math problems in order to bring up an overall math score within the classroom?
Yeah, well, don't forget about music. You know, that's the diversity. It's either sports or it's music. You know, that's all black kids can do, right? I tell you,
Well, I was going to say this, and we got to start calling it what it is. We got critical race theory is designed in a mischievous way to shame white folks into guilt feeling. That's what it's all about. It's about shaming and making whites feel guilty. I tell Greg, I say, when a black person calls you a racist, call them a racist back. It's the same thing, like if a shooter shoot at you, you shoot at them back, then all of a sudden things get calm.
Well, it happened. See, at least hasn't heard the story yet, but we had Warren from, he does a show also on Block Talk Radio, ended up calling me a racist. Now, I did kind of goad him into it. It was kind of a nasty thing on my part, but he did. He said, you're a racist. I said, okay, prove it. Well, it was the end of that conversation. You know, so, and it's, and like I said, this is the point I was making earlier. Candace Owens said this on the news last night, that white people have to get over this ridiculous guilt. I remember Dr. Walter Williams, when he was on the show, it was one of my first big interviews about 5 years ago. And he used to have these certificates of absolution for white people to get over the guilt. And so the one of the things actually that'd be really interesting is if black conservatives, you know, push this and say, you know, what's wrong with you white people? Stop with the guilt. Stop. Liberate yourselves. We did from the Democrat Party. Now you need to do it too. That would be an interesting emphasis to bring to it. Lisa?
By and large, black conservatives do this. That is exactly
okay.
what they do. If you
okay.
think about, you know, the Garden of Eden, that was the one thing, guilt and shame, that God did not intend that we bear as humanity. Mm-hmm. And so it has a power, I mean, just like a dark cloud, to just shut you down. So it's really like white people have to renew their own minds. That's one of the reasons why we made the documentary Systematic Deception. It's not just for black folk. It's for white folks to wake up
yep.
from this a whole label that they've put on themselves. You know, when I got called a racist, I put up a photo of my father and my son, and they are both blonde hair, blue eyes. And I said, mm-hmm. who am I, a racist? You know, I'm a
yeah.
black person. This is my father, and this is my son. Who am I a racist against, you know? And so we do have to challenge it. We have to be emboldened. Just like we challenge the white coat, we have to challenge these stereotypes and labels that are thrown on us for speaking, you know, not just our truth, but the truth of our nation, the truth of common sense, the truth of our future. You know, we're not thinking future forward, which is why we're allowing ourselves to be shut down. We keep thinking about the that none of us experienced firsthand. And that's where that emotionalism comes in.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's more of an American. It's very much an American thing. As I'm an immigrant, I was born in Toronto, Canada, spent four very formative years in Melbourne, Australia, and then came to the United States as a young teenager. And I've told this story a bunch mm-hmm. of times, but I'm looking around at Americans. I'm seeing black Americans, white Americans, you know, various different Americans, religions, you know, colors, things like that. But to me, all I saw was Americans. I mean, I was the one with a different accent. I was the minority of one. And people talk about being a minority. And it's like, you know, black kids are talking to me about, well, I'm a minority. I said, really? I'm a minority. And people used to laugh at me. I said, what do you mean you're a minority? I said, I'm not even a citizen here yet. You know, you people are all Americans. I didn't see color. I recognize the differences. Yes, I could tell a black person from a white person. But in terms of having that mean anything to me, didn't mean a damn thing. Because all I said were Americans.
Well,
and I said, why aren't you people Americans? Why don't you talk about your American common? We did in Australia. In Australia, we had Indian
exactly.
students. We had English, Canadians, Australians, Americans. We had New Zealanders. Where else? Nobody gave a damn. We had Samoans, we had Indonesians. We all wore the same school.
You're
going
to love it. Well, you know, you're
going to. Well, Lisa,
father,
she's only got a couple of minutes. All right, let's go,
yeah,
Lisa, then Pianki.
I'm
Lisa?
Half Australian. I'm half Australian. I'm an Australian.
We do have
citizen.
To talk then. G'day. How's
yeah,
it going?
My father came here at 17 and was put, or at 16, and was put in ESOL classes because he didn't speak Southern.
Well, you know, they're going to say you're not all black in it. That's what's going to be labeled on you. But you'd be surprised the labels that's put on blacks, conservatives, and the attempts to attack them. It goes all the way back to the Harlem Renaissance period with Hubert Harrison, mm-hmm. who talked like us from a conservative perspective. And you had your W.E.B. Du Bois that tried to get him fired from his post office job. It goes on today, too. And that
mm-hmm.
is racism. That is
yep.
racism. Racism has nothing to do with the skin, your color of your skin. It's the act. And if it's mm-hmm. called a racism when a white person does it, well, the same act when it's portrayed by a black person is, guess what? Racism.
Right. Love
yeah,
it.
No one's ever accused me of not being white enough. I'm still waiting for that one. Yeah, crazy things are. It's just we. Oh, it does. It probably does. Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, the labels, I think that we can get away from these. You know, I think that's part of what we do at Action Radio here. You know, I was talking about this earlier in the show, that one of the most important things about our legislation is that it has to apply to everybody. There's no privilege here. There's no punishment here. There's no segregation of laws for different people and different purposes. You know, it's all about freedom for everybody. And as we get beyond this, you know, it's going to be a big it's going to be a big difference. We only got a minute left. Lisa, you have to come back. This is way too much fun and way too fascinating. But I want to help you with legislation that I can. But let me give you the last minute or so to sum up or make any point or introduce what we're going to do next time or anything you want to talk about. Contact information, too. Lisa?
Yeah, so, yeah, you can go to Babbage for Congress or LisaNoelBabbage.com, and I would love for you guys to check me out online. Definitely contribute to the campaign, pray. We need folks that are willing to have these conversations in Washington, D.C., so it's BabbageForCongress.com or LisaNoelBabbage.com.
So you're running now for Congress, right? Is that
yes,
what you're doing?
I am.
Okay, so in
yes,
that case, let me encourage you to go to writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. And if there's any citizen legislation that you would like to run on, we're more than happy to have you incorporate that into your campaign.
Love it. Thank you so much, Greg.
Well, thank you. Well, this again. Lisa's going to be back, I can tell. We've got
yeah.
a big We got 10 seconds left. We got a big doctor conference tomorrow. Like I say, I think Ben Marble is busy. He won't be able to join us. Beauty Mikovits, Jim Thorpe, Brian Artis, and a couple of other folks I think will be dropping in as well. I think Dr. Deborah Viglione, who put on the rallies here in Pensacola, will be able to join us. So it's going to be a fascinating day tomorrow, too. And, of course, you all are welcome to join us as well. Lisa, thank you so much. We will do this again soon. And this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And our legislative website, once again, writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. And note the time tomorrow. We will be on at 10 in the morning Central Time to 1 p.m. Central Time. And because we have doctors, that's when we do our doctor panel on Thursdays. And I'll be back then.